Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Independent radio has always been a powerful force for democracy in the United States, and independent web radio is carrying on in that proud tradition. RadioPower.org is an independent web radio station supported entirely by donations from its listeners. I encourage you to click on the donations link to help keep this important alternative voice on the air and on the Internet. Thanks.
And that was, you were glad that Clinton lied to America. But can you explain why that is? That
you know what?
Glad that the president lied?
Actually, I didn't say I'm glad he lied. I think I said I didn't have a problem with what he did. Okay, here's the truth. Chris, let me tell you the truth. I don't know the dynamic of Bill and Hillary Clinton's marriage, but I don't think it's terribly good. The truth is, what he did was wrong. I'm happily married, and I would never do anything to threaten that marriage.
You don't find anything wrong with him lying about it to America? If you find something wrong with George Bush lying to America, you have to find fault in that. You can't say...
I certainly don't agree with what he did. Do I have a problem that he lied? Hey, listen, the guy was trying to protect his marriage. I think most people understand why he lied.
George Bush was trying to protect America, wasn't he?
Not by lying to us about weapons of mass destruction and having well over 600 people killed and well over 3,000 injured. No, I cannot put those in the same category, Chris.
Bill Clinton's they killed Americans on American soil. Ruby Ridge, David Koresh's people.
Okay,
they killed them and lied about that.
All right, Chris, stop and let's go back to our original conversation. Is President Clinton lying about Monica Lewinsky the same as George Bush lying about...
A lie is a lie.
No, that's not true. Come on, Chris.
A lie is a lie.
So if I lie to my wife and tell her that I'm not getting her anything for our anniversary on Wednesday and then I end up doing it, I'm in the same category with Bill Clinton and George Bush?
A lie is a lie.
Oh, man. God bless you. You and I will never agree on this one. We will never agree on this one. And it's not just Iraq that he lied to us about. He lied to us about the Medicare bill. He lied to us. Even his job numbers lie. He's lied during the State of the Union talking about balancing a budget. He even said it was a radio address, that he was going to ask for laws that require a balanced budget, and yet he's put $6 trillion on the books that we can't pay for.
If you follow government for more than 2 weeks, you know that everyone that's ever been president, they've had some sort of lie.
I'm making the assumption you're voting for the president.
Iran-Contra lied. Everyone has.
All I'm asking you to do, Chris, is open your mind to the reality that this president is not the president that can put us in the future in the way we can provide jobs and quality of life and next generation support. I'm concerned about my family and my children, and I'm concerned about my own job for that matter, and I'm concerned about yours. And this man continues to suck the life out of the American idea. And I can't believe so many of you just are blind to that. The world is round. We've already figured that out. That'll do it for us for today. We'll be back tomorrow. A lot of great stuff to get to then as well. If you'd like to get me off the air, tony@thetonyshow.com. In the meantime, I want to thank Jason, Greg, and everybody at the Michigan Talk Radio Network. You've been listening to the Tony Trupiano Show. As always, I ask that you be well.
Website is, hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent progressive radio network that is entirely sponsored by listener donations. We're in the middle of our spring pledge drive to help raise funding for the next quarter, and we ask that you consider making a donation to radiopower.org. Radio Power brings exclusively the Tom Hartman program, which is a wonderful, wonderful progressive program And we are currently experiencing such a high demand for the Tom Hartman program that our servers are being filled to capacity every day. And what we would really like to do is to be able to expand our server capacity so that more people can get the message, can listen to the Tom Hartman program, and our radio network can continue to grow as it has in the past few months. We also brought on a new talk show host this month, Radio Inside.
If you lower your payments and secure a rate as low as 2.63%, it's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I wonder who that is. What can I do you for?
A yodeler. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a sturdy, firm floor with Plitanium plywood from Georgia-Pacific. Floors made with Plitanium plywood are stiffer and more versatile than floors made with other subflooring materials. Plitanium plywood.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. It's Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. 1935. Put that in your bio computer. That was the year that the great experiment in creating a middle class began in the United States. People look at your, particularly those who have had the good fortune and wealth to travel to Europe. They look at people living in European countries. They go, wow, you know, it's a huge middle class in most of the old European countries. Why is that? Well, it has to do with what happened in the United States in 1935. In 1933. There's a reason why I'm getting to this, by the way. I should probably start out with the reason why. This an article from the New York Times. Bob Herbert, he wrote this on the 5th of April, 2 days ago, and he's talking about the situation with the fact that we are becoming, we American workers, more and more productive, and yet we're not seeing, we the workers are not seeing the result of that. He says, what is happening is nothing short of historic. The American workers' share of the increase in national income since November 2001, the end of the last recession, is the lowest on record. Employers took the money and ran. You know, very, very straightforward. Andrew Sum, the director of the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University, says, and I quote, this is the first time we've ever had a case where 2 years into a recovery, corporate profits got a larger share of the growth of national income than labor did. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. You've got, you know, Colin Powell running around, well, many of the apologists for this administration running around going, oh, it's outsourcing is no problem. It's you can't stop it. It's the normal thing. Walmart. Just lost this referendum in California. We're going to get into that a little later in the program. But Walmart has succeeded in resisting unionization efforts everywhere in the world. Well, what happened in 1935 was preceded in 33 and 34 by nationwide strikes and literally factory takeovers. The great sit-down strike in Flint, Michigan. Literally, factories were being taken over by workers. We were just beginning to come out of the Great Depression. And there was a widespread concern in Congress that a revolution was underway. that American workers, that this actually represented a threat to the domestic order, to the national security. And so in 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was passed, also known as the Wagner Act. And I'll read you a couple of small pieces of it. Employees, shall have the right to self-organization. See, here's the situation. Employers already had the right to self-organization. What this all comes down to it comes down to power. It comes down to the fact that if you want to have a middle class, a nation must have, the rules of the game of business defined in such a way that those people who are working have the same right to aggregate their power as do those for whom they work. If a corporation, if money can aggregate with the blessing of the state by forming a corporation and getting limited liability and getting all the benefits of the corporate form, if you don't give similar rights and powers to labor, then you end up with a situation, the situation that we have seen for 6,000 years, you end up with a feudal situation. F-E-U-D-A-L. You end up with feudalism. You end up with a situation where you have a small number of very wealthy people who control the means of production, and then you have a whole bunch of terrified, underpaid workers. And the United States has tried to resolve this issue in two ways. Teddy Roosevelt talked about the need for a living wage. Let's go in as the government and define a living wage. The problem with that, and it's a good first step, and the minimum wage is a vital thing for setting the floor. But the minimum wage, basically since the 1950s, as the minimum wage has not substantially increased, but inflation has eroded the purchasing power of the dollar, the minimum wage no longer represents a living wage. And so what's happened is that the floor has been dropping lower and lower and lower, and you have more and more people who are dropping into the from what you might call the middle class into the ranks of the working poor. And the other thing, Teddy Roosevelt pointed this out back in 1912, is that a living wage is something that, you know, depends on local conditions. In some cities, it takes a lot more money to live than in others. So setting a national floor is a bit of a challenge. And it still doesn't address the issue of power. This is really what it comes down to. If you want to have a middle class, and there are strong arguments for it, by the way, on the conservative side, there are arguments against it. The arguments against the middle class are that historically, the most stable forms of governance have been those of royalty, of monarchy, of oligarchy, of plutocracy. Kingdoms are stable. Feudalism is a stable system of governance. For hundreds of years, the serfs didn't rise up. They were kept successfully under the thumb of the feudal lords, or under the thumbs of the kings and the queens. And it's a very stable form of government. Alexander Hamilton made this argument at the Constitutional Convention in 1787. And had he had his way, we would have a very different form of government right now. But the cat got out of the bag in 1776 and through 1791 when the Bill of Rights was amended to the United States Constitution. The cat got out of the bag, and we decided, we the people don't want to be governed any longer by kings, by popes or theocrats, or by feudal lords, by the wealthy. We want to be governed by ourselves, by we the people. And as the power of the corporate form grew and grew in the United States, the abuses grew along with it. to the point where in the early 1930s you had literally workers taking over factories, citywide general strikes across the United States. And very, very concerned about this, very worried about this, Congress passed this law, the National Labor Relations Act, also known as the Wagner Act. Employees shall have the right to self-organization, to form, join, or assist labor organizations, to bargain collectively through representatives of their own choosing, and to engage in other concerted activities for the purpose of collective bargaining or other mutual aid and protection. Very straightforward. Section 7 applies to a wide range of union collective activities. It protects employees who have grievances, who make on-the-job protests. It protects picketing. It protects strikes. And Section 8 defines unfair labor practices. It set up the National Labor Relations Board as an organization to oversee this. This was in 1935. It created an explosion of unionization in the United States. 10 years later, in 1945, fully 35% of the American workforce was unionized. This was the beginning of the American middle class. See, everybody, people look at the situation right now and they go, corporate profits are at all-time high. 2 years in a row, we've had corporate profits in double digits. CEOs are making more money than ever before in history. Why don't we see this happening and the middle class is being wiped out, sliding deeper and deeper into debt, and the numbers of the working poor are exploding? Why don't we see the same thing happening in many of the Western European countries? The reason why is because in 1947, labor suffered a setback. And it's been basically going downhill since then. 1947 was the Taft-Hartley Act. And the Taft-Hartley Act, the Democrats were evenly split on this thing. It was introduced by Fred Hartley, Republican of New Jersey, in the House of Representatives, and introduced into the Senate by Robert Taft, Republican of Ohio. Taft was the son of the former president, very wealthy, ultra-conservative. And Fred Hartley, the guy who introduced it in the House of Representatives, was actually a friend of Adolf Hitler's. And prior to our entering the war, had been one of the loudest and most outspoken opponents of Roosevelt interfering in Europe. Well, these guys got together, and they introduced legislation that was actually written by lobbyists for General Electric, Alice Chalmers, Inland Steel, J.I. Case, Chrysler, and the Rockefeller family, the Rockefeller businesses. And this piece of legislation basically made it possible for labor to for management to bust up labor unions. It made it possible for states to have, quote, right to work laws, to say, okay, you don't have to, you know, it eliminated the closed shop in those states that wanted to do it. And the first states, of course, that did it were in the South. And we saw this movement then of labor to the South and a reduction in pay rates down there. And now we're seeing this worldwide. What if we want to have a middle class in the United States? Very simple, very straightforward. We must have equality of power between labor and management. I mean, this is a concept that our grandparents understood well, and many of our parents still probably remember it. But this generation and the preceding generation, those people born after say 1960, have forgotten. The struggles are over, and now we're reaping the whirlwind of this thing. There is a solution. There absolutely is a solution. Repeal the Taft-Hartley Act. We'll talk about that right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house,
Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like a small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Wakefield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wine. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wine from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working two or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by two factors, a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run into my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
There's been for changing, starving for truth. Closer to where I started, we're chasing after you. I'm falling even more in love with you.
And welcome back. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. It's Tom Hartman with you. 25 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to weigh in on the issue of the day, I'm suggesting here the problem that we're facing in the United States right now So many of our problems track back to the loss of the middle class, the loss of political participation, the frantic nature of life these days, the incredible mountains of wealth that are being built up that are threatening to throw us into another depression, the bizarre activities of the Bush administration. And I point to Taft-Hartley, the Taft-Hartley Law in 1947, that restored anti-strike injunctions, limited labor's ability to mass picket, prohibited secondary boycotts, restricted political contributions by unions, outlawed welfare funds not jointly controlled by management, and authorized employers to interfere in organizing. This, in my opinion, was the beginning of the end. And you know, there's a certain lag time there, but this is what has really harmed the middle class in America. 1-866-889-8894. Reggie in Michigan's on the line. Hey, Reggie, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Hartman?
Great.
I was just flipping through my Sirius Radio, and I just heard you elaborate on the Taft-Hartley Act. And me, myself, I'm 32 years old, and I had no idea that bill was actually the focus of a lot of problems that we're seeing today.
Oh, it very much is. See, a middle class is not a normal thing. The normal thing with laissez-faire capitalism, economics, whatever you want to call it, the normal thing with the type of economy that we have where it's absolutely unregulated is that it's the same thing as if you said, okay, we're going to have boxing matches, but there's not going to be any rules. And so you get Mike Tyson in there, you know, the heavyweight champion, and then you get some welterweight champion, and they fight each other. Who's going to win? And, you know, Mike Tyson's going to beat the stuffing out of the guy who weighs 150 pounds. So you have rules for the game. And in 1935, we decided, okay, we're going to have rules for the game of business about the relationship between labor and management. And in 1947, we started backing away from that. Part of the rationale was the whole Red Scare, which I'll get to in a minute. But anyhow, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, well, one quick thing. I'm a truck driver, and I go through, I've pretty much been every state in the U.S. And the one thing that really, you know, hit home was that I was going to a particular plant in Rochester, New York. And when I got there, you know, just an industrial town, and you think that, you know, okay, this is the lunch break, and people are coming out to go to lunch or it's a shift change. When I got there, come to find out, 1,500 of these people just got the pink slip because the upper management downsized because they're shipping all of their jobs to China.
Right. Right. And see, if it wasn't for Taft-Hartley, workers would have an opportunity to protest that. We could say, hey, wait a minute, we you know, you can't do this. But no, we have a situation now where the employers are in charge.
Hey, well, hey, look, I think so. Thanks for taking my call, and I'll be tuning in from now on. Thank
Great.
You.
Thanks for listening, Reggie. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. One of the ways that this was promulgated, C.E. Wilson, he was the head of General Electric back in 1947. And, you know, it's really interesting. He said, and in promoting the Taft-Hartley Act, which, you know, was passed the House on May 13, 1947, passed the Senate, and the Democrats were split 50-50. 21 voted for it, 21 against it. Harry Truman vetoed it. President Harry Truman, he said no, but the House and Senate overrode his veto. And anyhow, the head of GE, the way that he sold this thing was he said, the labor movement has been infiltrated by communists, and therefore we've got to have Taft-Hartley. It was a red herring, no pun intended. The real goal was to break the back of organized labor. You know, let's have more power in the hands of the corporations and less in the hands of the workers. And now we're seeing the results, the wiping out of the middle class of America. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There's a battle brewing at the Federal Communications Commission pitting cell phone providers against police and firefighters from around the country. It seems wireless phones cause increased amounts of interference to public safety communication systems because they use radio frequencies very close to each other. Cell phone interference is so bad that the FCC's been studying the issue. Two proposals to fix the interference are now in play. One, backed by police and firefighters and the majority of the wireless industry, would require cell phone companies to immediately address any problems as they crop up. The other plan, backed by Nextel Communications, would divide cell phone and public safety radio traffic into two distinct channels and then would give Nextel some $3 billion worth of extra spectrum in exchange for sacrificing space to protect public safety communications. FCC staff are backing the Nextel plan, and the commission is expected to vote on it later this month.
Yet another Bush administration official has praised for the offshoring of U.S. jobs. U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow recently told the Cincinnati Inquirer that outsourcing is a good corporate move, saying that many business activities can be done just as well or better at a lower cost.
A confidential report about safety on Summer Olympics construction sites around Athens, Greece, paints a new grim picture of its cost. Between 2001 and 2003, at least 13 workers have been killed on work sites and more than 1,000 have been injured. Two main factors are cited for the carnage. Overtime laws are being abused as contractors rush to finish jobs in order to collect hefty bonuses from the Greek government, and money mandated by law to be spent on health and safety efforts on the work sites has been siphoned off by contractors looking for extra profit.
According to a report released by the General Accounting Office late Friday, the majority of companies in the United States reported owing no taxes from 1996 through 2000. Corporations were divided by nationality, and among American industries, 6 out of 10 paid no taxes, compared to 71% of foreign companies. The report also found a steady increase for all corporations claiming no tax liability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The White House wants yet another round of corporate tax cuts. It believes cutting the tax burden on business stimulates job growth. But historical analysis of U.S. federal tax rates and unemployment recently completed by the Brookings Institution shows no basis for the correlation. Look no further than the Reagan era. He cut taxes in 1981, and in the following 2 years, unemployment went up. Over the decade, taxation slowly rose again, and by 1989, the unemployment rate had fallen.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can fit. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century.
And welcome back. Common sense and truth in broadcasting. It's the Tom Hartman radio program with you. 26 minutes before the hour. On April 17th, April 1947, the Taft-Hartley bill passed. And by 1953, now keep in mind, this was the peak, 1947, this was the peak of unionization in the United States. More than a third of all workers in the United States were unionized. By 1953, as a result of Taft-Hartley, U.S. News and World Report would ask, there was a headline, "Are unions slipping? No growth in 6 years." In 1946, the CIO, the Congress and Industrial Organization, the AFL-CIO, the CIO's membership had been 6.3 million. By 1954, it was down to 4.6 million. Overall, union membership fell from 33.7% of the labor force in 47 to 31.5% by 1950. And then the fall really picked up steam when Ronald Reagan came into office and said, "That's it, guys. No more mollycoddling these unions. We're going to get in a labor department like Elaine Chao now. We've got the head of the labor department who's openly anti-labor. And, you know, busting up PATCO. Trying to put an end. And this is, the conservatives are just unabashed about this. Put an end to the unionization. One of the main reasons why so many cons are opposed to public schools and to our government, you know, to government employees is because government employees are unionized. And they want to break up as many unions as possible. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Bill on Interstate 90 in Wisconsin's on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I've called you a couple of times. I got a question for you. It's a, kind of a two-part question. Now, do you believe a person has a right to work or a right to be treated fairly at work?
Neither. I don't think either one of these has to do with rights. But I do think that we as a society have the both the right and the obligation. We collectively, you and me and everybody else who makes up we the people of the United States, we have the right and the obligation to define the rules of the game of business, both on management and the labor side, so that it ultimately works for the best of society.
Okay, there I will agree with you, because I've heard people say in the past, well, I have a right to a job, and I'm thinking, no, you don't.
No.
You have a responsibility to support yourself.
Sure.
And you have a reasonable expectation to be treated fairly at work, but you don't have a right to work. That's a very dangerous area.
I absolutely agree. I am not an advocate of either socialism or communism. That's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm saying is that, you know, I'm all in favor of the people playing the game of business, both on the labor side and on the management side. I just know. I mean, what we all know is that the rules of the game get defined by government. That's us. And that at various times in the history of the United States, we've defined the rules in different ways. And we now have the historical perspective. We can look back over 227 years and we can see that at those times when we said, okay, labor has the right to have power roughly equal to that of management, or not, obviously never even got close to, but labor has the right to have certain powers, the right to strike, the right to you know, and that when that happens, a middle class emerges. And when you do away with that, there is no middle class. And so if we agree that having a middle class is a good thing, then unionization is a good thing.
But here's the point I wanted to make, you know, all right, I'm not union. All right, and I deliver to a lot of union docs from time to time, and I run across a lot of guys that, you know, it's not everywhere, but I see it where there's the problem I see with some unions is that you got guys that aren't doing their job, but these companies can't get rid of them or discipline them because then they got a problem with the union. Now, you know, I'm all for a union, you know, for workers' rights and all that stuff. You know, I mean, you know, the Teamsters, while they have had a corrupted past, I think they're, you know, slowly turning around. But you also have to have some common sense on the union side that, you know, hey, if a guy's not doing his job and you're not going to let the company do anything about it, well, maybe the union ought to do something about it.
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with you, Bill, but the point that you're making is this. Let me flip this around. You know,
okay.
in some police departments around the United States, there are cops who carry cocaine in their back pocket, so if they want to bust somebody, they can toss it in their car and then arrest them.
Yeah, that's flat out wrong.
Should we do away with police?
No. And I'm not saying, and I didn't say do away with unions.
Yeah.
And
the argument that the conservatives will make. They'll say, you know, there's some corrupt unions, or occasionally you've got union, you know, union workers who are goofing off, or you can't fire incompetent teachers because of the unions, blah, 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 blah. Therefore, we should get rid of unions. And I say, you know, therefore we should fix the system.
And even though I do have more of a conservative leaning than anything, you know, in a lot of areas than anything else, I would tell a person like that, you know, that's a fallacy, that's false thinking. You know, that's ridiculous, and you really ought to think about what you say before you open your pie hole.
Yeah, any of us who are in the middle class, anybody who earns a decent wage, even if they're not a member of a union, is earning it because of the union movement of the 1935.
Agreed. I don't want to see unions go away. I really don't. I'd just like to see them clean up their act a little bit, and we all know the government really needs to clean up their act, but government cleaning up their act is up to us.
But what about business cleaning up its act? What about corporations cleaning up their act? What happened to the idea of holding corporations accountable also?
That's like that news report I just heard about a lot of corporations haven't paid taxes since 96. I'm like, excuse me?
Right.
What's up with that?
Yeah, well, what's up with that is that power has shifted massively into the hands of the conservative corporation. I mean, this is the conservative agenda. The conservative agenda is power for the corporations, cheap labor, frighten the middle class, turn them into the working poor, keep people frightened, keep people in poverty, keep people in debt, and you know, they're not going to protest. They're going to, you know.
Well, yeah, but Tom, at the same time, you got the liberals on the other side. I have yet to see a liberal who doesn't like taking more of my money out of my pocket. I mean, I live in Wisconsin. Okay, it's a tax hell up here. They love taxes. And now we got another governor, and he just loves more property taxes.
Well, you know, it's a nice slogan, Bill, but the reality is that during the Ronald Reagan administration, his 8 years, and so far during George Bush's 4 years, these two conservatives have raised taxes more than Bill Clinton did.
Not paid less in taxes than my income tax. My income tax went down. Of course, that was offset by Wisconsin's new gas tax.
Yeah, Bill,
they got a permanent gas tax goes up every year.
I'm guessing if you add up all the taxes you're paying, I mean, government actually reduced in size under Clinton, and it increased in size under both Reagan, Bush 1, and Bush 2. And ultimately, the amount that we're paying for that is increasing. Now, you know, that which brings up a whole other issue, and that is, you know, what's the appropriate role of government and what do we want them to do? But I don't want to get into that right now. I want to stay on the issue of labor. But yeah, I mean, we can all, you know, again, it's like, you know, if you got a few corrupt police, you don't do away with the police department. You got some incompetent firefighters, you don't do away with the fire department. You got a government that isn't working exactly the way it should. It doesn't mean that it should be done away with and replaced by General Electric.
Exactly.
Okay. Bill, thanks for the call.
As usual, Tom, I may not always agree with you, but I do enjoy talking with you.
Okay, great. I appreciate the call, Bill. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. Patrick in New Jersey is on the line. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Yes, Tom, very good to hear you. I've been listening a couple of weeks and really appreciate your program. Very incisive and intelligent.
Thank you.
So thank you for the work. And this topic you brought up is really crucial. I'm glad you're highlighting it. In the European countries, Western Europe, the level of unionization of the labor force is far higher. I've seen some statistics where it's about 25-30% of the workforce in Europe that are union members, whereas here in the U.S., it's now declined to like 10% or less of the workforce that are unionized. And there you have encapsulated the whole explanation of why the living standards are so much better in Europe.
Yeah.
And the previous caller was talking about taxes. Hey, the problem is not how high your taxes are. The question is, what are you getting for your taxes?
Yeah, excellent
now,
point.
Now, here, we're not getting anything but a bloated military and imperialist adventures around the world with military overspending. We're not getting enforcement of labor laws. We're not getting a national health insurance program. We're not getting daycare subsidies for working people, working families. We're not getting anything for our tax money. But going back to the labor thing, this is really crucial because it reminds me of a friend of mine had this T-shirt that said, unions, the people who brought you the weekend.
Right, which is true, without, and a 40-hour week.
Right, without the labor movement, think of what life would be like these days. And we get a vision of what the neocons are trying to do. They're trying to do away with overtime pay.
Yeah.
You know, they want people to work like in the third world. And this is their vision. They want the whole world to be like it is in, say, Brazil or Indonesia or India, where there's a tiny elite who are super wealthy. The middle class is all but minuscule or nothing. And the vast majority of the population are destitute and desperate and in poverty.
And when you talk to serious
capitalism,
and when you talk, well, that's not capital. I mean,
unregulated capital.
Yeah, that's laissez-faire capitalism. And when you talk to serious, thoughtful, conservative thinkers, they will suggest to you that they would agree with that. They wouldn't put it in those terms, and that they think that that's a good thing because that's a stable form of governance. If you've got too many people in the middle class, too many people participating in politics, it makes things too unstable. We can't predict who's going to be in charge.
Stable for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
You talked about the rules. The rules, that's very important. Without the kinds of rules capitalism needs, you end up with a situation like India or Brazil or Indonesia, where you have the vast majority in destitution.
Well, what's interesting,
we've got to stop that.
What's interesting is India is flipping it around. I mean, they're siphoning jobs out of the United States, and at the same time, they're putting up trade barriers so that the American goods can't easily be sold, or Chinese goods largely, cannot easily be sold into India. They have very, very substantial import tariffs. And they're starting to get labor protections there. Labor unions are starting to emerge in India.
Well, that may be a good thing. I'm hoping that the wages will go up in India because that will be a good thing.
Well, then the corporations will just move to China. I mean, this is what happened in Mexico right after NAFTA. Everybody went to Mexico, and now all these factories are closing up, and they're all moving to China.
But when people talk about capitalism and regulations and the so-called regulatory burden, I tell them, look at places like Indonesia or India. That's what happens when you don't have proper regulations on the business and corporate world.
Yeah.
Is that what you want here?
Well, that's
I say to people, not you.
That's certainly what Grover Norquist wants. So, Patrick, thanks for the call.
Right,
I appreciate
thank you,
hearing
Tom.
From you.
Great show.
Thanks. 15 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program. I think it's time to repeal the Taft-Hartley Act. Just blow it away. Undo it. Let's bring back the right of workers to unionize in the United States. Let's restore some semblance of balance in power between labor and management. And you know, it, rather than going in with the government and saying, oh, we know the answer, this is what it should be, you know, I really don't think that that's the best solution. I think the best solution is a free market solution of letting labor and of setting up the rules of the game so that labor and management have relatively equal power. Let them duke it out. They'll work out in each be different parts of the United States, different things that work practically for the local economies. It's just, you know, very straightforward. It's kind of Darwinian in a way. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, you so stimulate my thinking every day that I fear I've become too frequent a caller with you. But two thoughts today. I wonder if what you're saying couldn't be converted into action, if people that are listening to you wouldn't start calling or writing their congressman and asking, let's get a movement going to repeal this Taft-Hartley. I think that would be a real good step, not just the idea, but taking some action. And two, I think Kucinich and others have been speaking to the core that allows us to get these damn Taft-Hartley acts, and I think we're getting the equivalent of one every month or so right now under the Bush administration.
Well, you know, Kucinich has actually sponsored legislation to repeal Taft-Hartley.
No, it's key to me. If we weren't so gullible and deceived, that man would be our president. But right now, the key to the problem seems to be that bribing politicians, corrupt special interests paying off politicians, is an American way of life. To speak against it's un-American. So we get the worst of exploited people putting these Bushes in office, and then them enacting all kinds of legislation to shift money's power to the people that are putting them in power. I've asked these politicians about this. Can we end that? Because then it's just trying. But they say, well, it all balances out. One side pays us off, the other side pays us off. But it doesn't. The last time a poor person bought a politician, I don't think it ever happened, you know. So there's nobody speaking for the have-nots on this system. I think public funding of elections and making it a jailable crime to accept money from corrupt special interests, that has to come from the citizens. No politician, not many, are going to support it. We're going to have initiatives. People putting that on the ballot ourselves, you know, to end bribing politicians of a way of life.
Absolutely. I agree, Dave, and well said. Thank you very much for the call. It's, you know, here more than 60% of U.S. corporations, this from the Wall Street Journal yesterday, more than 60% of U.S. corporations, an article by John D. McKinnon, many companies avoided taxes even as profits soared and boomed. More than 60% of U.S. corporations did not owe any federal taxes for 1996 through 2000, years when the U.S. economy boomed and corporate profits soar. This according to the investigative arm of Congress. Corporate tax receipts have shrunk markedly as a share of the federal budget in recent years. By 2003, they've fallen to just 7.4% of overall federal receipts, the second lowest since 1934, the year before the Wagner Act, which made it legal for unions to form. Are you starting to see a relationship here? Wake up, friends. 1-866-889-8894. Fred in Indianapolis on the line. Hey, Fred, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. Hey, great topic.
Thank you. We got about 30 seconds here, Fred.
Yeah. I just wanted to let everybody know that this is the most important election in the in my generation. I'm 43 years old, and it has a direct impact on labor. When you think of the fact that this administration has legislation pending, if I remember right, on overtime,
Yeah, not just legislation, but administrative rules. They want to change the rules of the game. Absolutely,
exactly.
Fred. I appreciate the call. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
Tom Hartman has a new illustrated book called We the People, A Call to Take Back America.
You mean Tom Hartman has a comic book out?
No, it's an illustrated book that tells the history of America's takeover by multinational corporations and what we, as citizens, can do to take it back.
Illustrated? You mean it has pictures?
Well, it's illustrated the same way a comic book is. Easy and fun, but it's also about a serious topic, the survival of democracy.
How do I get a copy?
It's in bookstores across America and online. You can also find it at buzzflash.com. There's more information at www.tomhartman.com or by calling 1-800-765-1319.
What was that number again?
1-800-765-1319.
The Rabbi Gray Show there.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Bottled water does not necessarily mean better water. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A typical label on a plastic water bottle uses terms such as pure, glacial, and unpolluted. Brian Howard recently investigated the quality of bottled water for E! Magazine. He says it's a self-regulated industry and labels can be misleading.
Most of the language like pure, natural, glacial, pristine, all those words are unregulated. So people sort of take it for granted. They just think, oh, well, if it's someone went to the trouble of bottling it up, then it must be more pure.
Howard says consumers drink bottled water because they think it's safer. But he says as much as 40% of bottled water originates from a tap. And he says bottled water is not under the same strict regulations as normal tap water.
One of the reasons people drink bottled water is because they believe it's going to be cleaner than their tap water. So they're really replacing their tap water with bottled water. The industry doesn't want to admit that. They say that they're providing a convenience of food. So it's not regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency.
In 1999, the National Resources Defense Council conducted a study of 103 different brands of bottled water. A quarter of them were contaminated by bacteria, arsenic, or chemicals at levels that exceeded California state standards. Howard says, unlike municipal water utilities, bottled water companies do not have to supply water quality data to the public. And he says bottlers can destroy their records after 2 years. Howard says consumers have difficulty knowing just how pure their bottled water actually is. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. How is it that corporations in America have managed to shift most of the tax burden to you and me? That they're running roughshod over worker protections, that they're able to export jobs overseas? It's because labor has lost its power because the rules of the game were changed by conservatives in Congress. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what are your thoughts on this?
I think that there has never, ever been a president in the history of this republic that has transferred more wealth from the middle class and the poor and at the same time accumulating debt in the history of this republic.
Well, before the 30s, there really wasn't a middle class. So, you know, it's sort
right.
of an unfair charge. I'd say, you
Not
know,
really. I don't think it's unfair. We're supposed to be progressing, aren't we, as a society and as a culture?
Well, it depends on your definition of progressing. I mean, the conservatives would say that the middle class is an anomaly. You know, if the middle class requires labor unions, then we don't need no stinking middle class. That's the conservative point of view. I heard, you know, I was driving to the airport last week and I was listening to one of the more well-known conservative talk show hosts, and he was going on and on and on about how, yeah, John Kerry wants to raise taxes on those people who make more than $200,000 a year. You know, $200,000 a year isn't all that much. You know, you got to make at least that much to live in New York City. And he's going on and on and on about how $200,000 and, you know, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year is like, you know, that's the middle class. And I'm going, this guy is clueless. I mean, these guys are so out of touch with reality.
Right, and he's probably making 201. But besides
he's
that
making
fact,
a couple million a year, I know.
Yeah, besides that fact, I think that this president, if that's what you want to call him, I guess he's really the resident, he has no concern for the middle class. But the way I look at it is I feel that everybody in this country has a right, if we're going to call this a free country and if we're going to call this a democracy, everybody in this country has a right for their will to prevail as long as it's legal and lawful. And I can tell you right now, I can guarantee you right now that the majority of the people in this country would rather be middle class than poor.
There you go. Well said, Armin. I appreciate it. And the way to bring back the middle class in the United States, very straightforward, repeal the Taft-Hartley Act. Actually, it's even simpler than that. Throw the conservatives out of office. Step one. The Tom Hartman Radio Program here. You're listening to the radio support group of, by, and for We the People.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent progressive radio network that is entirely sponsored by listener donations. We're in the middle of our spring pledge drive to help raise funding for the next quarter, and we ask that you consider making a donation to radiopower.org. Radio Power brings exclusively the Tom Hartman program, which is a wonderful, wonderful progressive program, And we are currently experiencing such a high demand for the Tom Hartman program that our servers are being filled to capacity every day. And what we would really like to do is to be able to expand our server capacity so that more people can get the message, can listen to the Tom Hartman program, and our radio network can continue to grow as it has in the past few months. We also brought on a new talk show host this month, Radio Inside Scoop, with Mark Levine. Mark Levine is a former congressional attorney and a Washington insider. He is a Yale Law School graduate, and he brings a perspective to talk radio that is simply not out there today. Mark is a Washington insider. He has numerous connections within the Beltway, and he broadcasts live from Washington, D.C. every Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. here on Radio Power. And Mark has some wonderful guests on his program, and he has the as he likes to call, the inside scoop. He has so many sources within Washington that help him to break stories before even the national news media breaks the stories. And it's just a wonderful high-energy program, and we're very, very proud to have the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine here on RadioPower.org. We also bring you other talk show programs, the Tony Truppiano Show from Michigan Talk Radio, and Peter Werby's Night Call on Sunday night, as well as Rama Schneider's Girl Radio, which he likes to call Mom and Pop Radio. Rama and his wife, Grace, host a two-hour program from Vermont, and it's just a wonderful, low-key mom-and-pop radio program, like they like to call it. It's just a fabulous program, and it's been getting tremendous feedback. And so we bring you all of these wonderful, truly progressive programs that are fact-filled and that bring a perspective that is unique in talk radio. And for this, we ask that you drop by RadioPower.org and make a donation to our station today so that we can continue to bring you these fabulous progressive talk radio programs. Again, our website is radiopower.org, and click on the donations link, and you'll find a number of donation options. You can become a member of the station for as little as $5 a month. That's right. For the price of a pizza, you can support Internet Radio, and we can continue to bring you the fabulous programs that we do here on radiopower.org. This is Shelby LaPree, station manager, thanking you for listening to Radio Power.
Came when he answered the phone when it rang. The caller, the homeowner's daughter, immediately hung up and called her mother to tell her someone was in the house. Then the mother called, and the man not only answered again, but identified himself. He was arrested after leaving the house, walking through the neighborhood. The man claimed that he left the cookies at the house and was just coming back to get them. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
If you saw a news report on your local television station, then later you learned that report had actually been written by the federal government and that the reporter actually was hired by the government to read the government-written script, might that affect a report's credibility in your mind? And might it affect the credibility of your local TV station as well? Nonsense, you say. This isn't the Soviet Union. This is the land of the free. We don't allow government-scripted news in America. No? Well, maybe you've seen some recent news reports touting the benefits of George W.'s new prescription drug law for Medicare patients. Some of the segments show Bush signing the law and getting a standing ovation from those watching. One shows a pharmacist explaining the program to an elderly customer. "It sounds like a good idea," says the customer. "A very good idea," responds the pharmacist. Talk about puff pieces. In none of these is it mentioned that Bush's Law is an exorbitantly expensive program that will benefit the drug company gougers more than senior citizens, or that the Bushites lied about the price tag in order to get Congress to okay the program. That's because this news bite was produced and distributed to TV stations nationwide by Bush's own Department of Health and Human Services. Your tax dollars at work. Lots of dollars. The agency will spend some $50 million this year on its advertising campaign to glorify the program. These news packages are called VNRs, video news releases, and they've been used for some time by corporations. Our government is simply following the corporate lead, spoon-feeding news to TV stations, which don't bother identifying the source of these packaged stories. This is Jim Hightower saying, what we have here is the dangerous combo of government propaganda and journalistic fraud. To help stop this, call the Committee for Concerned Journalists, 202-293-7394.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use a directive.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com on the internet with the organic wine company, ecowine.com. The newsletter factory. I mentioned you heard an ad in the last hour that we have a new book out. I have a new book out. It's called We the People. It's a I don't want to call it a comic book because it's almost 200 pages long, but it's an illustrated collection of my columns from Common Dreams. It's I like it. I think I've never seen anything quite like it. I think the publisher did a great job with it. And I want to give one away to whoever can call and answer this question correctly. Here's our contest for the day. The world's oceans contain dead zones. There are dead zones in the oceans of the world, places where nothing can live. How many of those dead zones are there around the planet? These are dead zones, by the way, created by human activity, caused by pollution. Are there 10 of them? Are there 50 of them? Are there 100 of them? Or are there 150 dead zones around the world, in the world's oceans? Be the first with the right answer to call 1-866-889-8894, and we'll put you on the air and we'll give you a book, a copy of We the People. You see, this new study, this is quite remarkable. TV may cause attention deficit disorder. This was out actually a couple days ago. The researchers have found that every hour preschoolers watch television each day boosts their chances by almost 10% of developing attention deficit problems later in life. Every hour, 10% increase, every hour per day, a 10% increase, and the probability of your child developing ADD. This is something I first wrote about this in I forget which one of the books, one of the books that I wrote on attention deficit disorder, and it's certainly well documented in my most recent one, The Edison Gene. What the mechanism is here, the mechanism is very straightforward.
And the way it works is, it's fascinating, actually. I find it just fascinating. I'll just very quickly share it with you here. We'll digress from politics for just a moment. And the mechanism is that the way that we have historically communicated information to people in the, you know, to our youth, the way that we've historically communicated culture is by telling stories. For a million years, we sat around the campfires and somebody told a story and they og and zog, you know, and then I chased the woolly mammoth and then he was chasing me and then I was chasing him, and the kids are sitting around the campfire imagining what the storyteller is saying. You know, hallucinating, imagining. And so what's happening is auditory information is coming in. Words are coming into the ears. And those words are then being processed in the part of the brain called Broca's region. It's Broca's and Wernicke's regions are the parts of the temporal lobes, the side part of the brain where we process sound. But Broca's region is where we process language, and Wernicke's region is where we process music, and by and large. But they both interact a little bit. And then, in order to create a picture, we have to send a signal from the temporal lobes, from the hearing part, all the way to the back of the brain, what's called the occipital region, where we process visual stuff. And that's where visual imagination happens. And so the more often that somebody hears something in their ears and then imagines something, the more heavily what's called myelinated, the more heavily laid down it becomes the pathway between that part of the brain that processes sound and that part of the brain that processes pictures. Now, why is this important? Because memory is primarily visual. If you remember something with a picture, then you'll remember it for a long, long time. If you try to remember simply words, just auditory memory, it tends to go away. It's the old memory tricks that they teach people. If you want to remember a number, visualize it. If you want to remember anything, visualize it. You know, the absurd picture technique, for example, is a way of memorizing things. And so what happened was that for a million years, as our culture, and we have a winner, by the way. I'll take his call in just a minute. But let me finish this. For a million years in our culture, we taught our children how to connect the auditory region of their brains and the visual region of their brains so that they could learn by hearing things and still have that learning and hold that learning. And then along came reading. Now, with reading, we speak out loud in Broca's region, in the auditory part of the brain, and then it goes back to the visual part and it creates an imagination. So that again is a way of learning. Then came the radio, and you know, there's the coconuts on the table, you know, and the Lone Ranger rides again, you know, and the kids are sitting around listening to the radio and they're imagining, you know, even though it's coconuts on a board, they're imagining this horse and all that kind of stuff. And people were still being taught how to learn. And then along came television. And with television, the visual information goes into the eyes, right back to the occipital part of the brain, and the auditory information goes into the ears, right into the temporal parts of the brain, and the two don't connect. And the result is a learning disability. And I've been saying this for 10 years. The science is not new, frankly. But here now, the first good epidemiological study, where they actually look at, you know, populations over time. It appeared in the April issue of the magazine Pediatrics, a magazine for pediatricians, for child doctors for kids. Every additional hour of television a day that a child watches, young children, preschoolers, increases by 10% their probability of having learning disabilities later in life. Very straightforward relationship. So, radio, yes. TV, no. Just wanted to share that with you. Okay, here's our question. The world's oceans have contained how many dead zones virtually devoid of life? And Mark in, is it Pearland, Texas?
Pearland.
Yep. Hey, Mark, what's the answer?
150.
You're right. Pollution is to blame as excessive levels of nutrients such as nitrogen triggers blooms of algae that consume most of the oxygen, suffocating other species. This is from the New Scientist. The largest of the dead zones covers 70,000 square kilometers. About, 50,000 square miles, according to a report released on Monday by the United Nations Environment Program. Well done, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Did Louise already get your address and stuff to send
yes,
you the book?
Sir.
She did.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. I appreciate
Thank
the
you.
Call, and congratulations on winning a copy of We the People, our new book. It's great you called in. We had a whole bunch of calls, and apparently nobody could believe 150 dead zones around the planet. Well, it's not surprising, really. Yesterday, I mentioned the fact that the Republicans have sent out this talking point memo to Republican candidates that Jim Jeffords and actually a few people who are still Republicans are very concerned about, in which they're saying, when you speak to your constituents, be sure and tell them that global warming isn't necessarily real, that the water is getting better, and, you know, that there's more forest now than there used to be, and the air is cleaner than it used to be, blah de blah de blah. And here we have, that was sort of the setup. Here is the executive director of the Sierra Club. His name is Carl Pope. And responding to that Bush administration memo.
In 2003, for the first time, the progress that began under Richard Nixon stopped.
Stopped.
And EPA reported that America's waterways were dirtier.
Now, this isn't the Greenpeace reporting it. This is the Environmental Protection Agency reporting that for the first time since Richard Nixon was president, our waterways are dirtier.
Because the Bush administration has cut to a fraction of its former level federal support for cities and counties and states trying to clean up sewage, keep it off our beaches. Because the Bush administration has exempted from regulation some of the largest sources and most rapidly growing sources of water pollution, factory feedlots. And because the Bush administration has actually instructed EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers.
This is going to amaze you. The Bush administration has actually instructed the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers.
Not to enforce the Clean Water Act.
Not to enforce the Clean Water Act.
With regard to 20% of America's wetlands. The progress that we began under Richard Nixon has been reversed under this president.
Mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. 1-866-889-8894. I want to get into a conversation about what's going on in Iraq here, but first we have got Jeff on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up? Jeff and Denver.
I wanted to talk about this thing about TV and children. It's really stunning when you look at the statistics about kids.
Yeah.
And TV, like 25% of the kids that are 2 years old have TVs in their bedrooms.
Oh, I know. It's incredible.
Yeah, and when you get to, just a few years older, it's like one in three have a TV in their bedroom.
Yeah.
And that's just stunning how all these things, it's not even that it's a community TV anymore. It's also an isolated TV. It brings up, I think, one of the worst inventions ever was the Sony Walkman. You see families driving along in their cars, and everybody has their own Walkman on, and they're just not relating.
Yeah. Yeah, technology can be a two-edged sword, and that's why it's important, I think, for people to understand the risks associated with these technologies as well as the rewards. I mean, I'm not saying that we should do away with TV, although we did. Back in 1978, we got rid of the TV when our kids were all young, and it was amazing what happened. When we got rid of the TV in our house, all of a sudden our kids started reading.
The past few days, they were recommending, I don't remember who came out with recommendations that like kids under two shouldn't watch TV at all.
Yeah, that's this pediatric study, that TV actually rewires the brain. It actually rewires the brain, and it's significant, permanent, and long-lasting. Jeff, thanks for the call. Good to hear from
you. Thanks. Take care.
1-866-889-894. Here's the question. Why would the Bush administration do something so dumb as to shut down the newspaper of al-Sadr, this Shiite cleric, knowing that there would be a violent reaction? I mean, the guy's kind of like, you know, the local mafioso, only he's got tens of thousands of supporters. They've been sitting on this arrest warrant for 3 months because they knew that if they tried to serve it, everything's going to break apart. And now it is. Well, over in Canada, in the Globe and Mail, the Canadian Globe and Mail newspaper, Naomi Klein, a Canadian, put forth an interesting suggestion. She says that the reason why the Bush administration is doing this, that it's actually an intentional provocation, and the goal is to push back the handover of power from June 30th until after the elections, because the concern is that when that handoff of power happens, the country is going to fall into chaos. There's going to be a civil war, and it'll look bad for the Bushies. Interesting theory. I'll share with you a few more details right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Wakefield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to Solutions for Progress Incorporated, American workers are 81% more productive today than they were in 1968, and corporate profits are 39% higher when adjusted for inflation. But minimum wage workers earn nearly 40% less than their counterparts did a generation ago. The lowest paid workers received $1.65 an hour in 1968, the equivalent of $8.45 in 2003.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went off with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public...
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, we know where we're going.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Well, that's what I was waiting for. Where's the music? 25 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. Naomi Klein in the Globe and Mail in Canada writes, on the surface, this chain of events is mystifying. With the so-called Sunni Triangle in flames after the gruesome Fallujah attacks, why is Mr. Bremer pushing the comparatively calm Shia South into battle? Here's one possible answer. Washington has given up on its plans to hand over power to an interim Iraqi government on June 30th and is now creating the chaos it needs to declare the handover impossible. A continued occupation will be bad news for George Bush on the campaign trail, but not as bad as if the handover happens and the country erupts, an increasingly likely scenario given the widespread rejection of the legitimacy of the interim constitution and the U.S.-appointed government. Keep in mind, it's not just Sauter. Sistani last week said that he will not go along with Article 61 of the Constitution. That's the article that defines when the thing takes effect. In other words, no, we don't want it now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, great many. I'll try and put them in order here. The thing about El Sauter is, you're right, he's pretty much a mafioso-type thug person, but he's not as dumb as he might look. I mean, he has taken refuge in one of Islam's holiest shrines and surrounded himself with gunmen, so the only way we're going to get him is to blow it apart with tanks or helicopters, and, you know, Sistani's followers are not going to stand for that.
No.
It's, you know...
This guy's crazy like a fox. He's crazy like Jerry Falwell.
Yeah, very much. And the same thing, you know, the point that has to be made, look, this is not a war. This is an insurgency attacking an occupying army, and much is being made of Ted Kennedy's comparison to Vietnam. I think he was talking more about credibility than anything else. But, I mean, you can't think about it without thinking of the Viet Cong attacking our troops, or the Iraqis attacking, you know, the first British occupation, or the French and Dutch resistance attacking the German occupations, or what's going on in the Gaza right now. This isn't going to end. It started when we got there. It's not going to stop.
Yeah, this is it's actually eerily reminiscent of 1920 when the Iraqis rose up against the British. And it's playing out in ways that are so startlingly similar. You know, it was the Shia who were the last to go against the British, and here we are again.
I hadn't heard that opinion or that point of view that this might be something that was planned simply because there's no way we're going to be able to hand the keys over to anybody in 80 days. It's not going to work.
Well, there's not a who to whom we can hand them yet. I mean, it's what's his name? Ahmed Chalabi is trying to position himself for it, but you know, in the Middle East, they all know that the guy is, you know, he's 22 years of hard labor. He's been sentenced to in Jordan for bank fraud, for the Petra Bank that went down in Lebanon. I mean, you know, in Jordan, his credibility in Iraq is not real high, let's say.
Well, no, and the fact that I think he's a Sunni too isn't going to help matters.
Yeah, not with the Shia.
Thank you. Well said.
Okay, thanks, Chris. I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-4. In the midst of this, Ralph Nader weighs in. I don't know if you saw this, April 7th. That's today. Associated Press story. Independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader called Tuesday for President Bush to be impeached for deceiving the American people night after night after night about U.S. involvement in Iraq. Is this an offense worthy of impeachment, or is this just grandstanding by Nader? Or both? Could it be? I don't know. It's interesting. I'll share with you some of Nader's rationales, and then we'll look at what's going on in Iraq right after this. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Early this month, MCI finished the overhaul of its books from its WorldCom era, and the damage from the company's fraud-laden collapse in 2002 totals a record $74.4 billion. The restatement completely wipes profits off the books from 2000 onward. MCI attributes more than $14 billion directly to the financial misdeeds of previous executives now facing criminal charges. The rest of its loss, it says, is from depreciation tied to the ongoing slump in the telecom sector as a
pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There's a battle brewing at the Federal Communications Commission pitting cell phone providers against police and firefighters from around the country. It seems wireless phones cause increased amounts of interference to public safety communication systems because they use radio frequencies very close to each other. Cell phone interference is so bad that the FCC's been studying the issue. Two proposals to fix the interference are now in play. One, backed by police and firefighters and the majority of the wireless industry, would require cell phone companies to immediately address any problems as they crop up. The other plan, backed by Nextel Communications, would divide cell phone and public safety radio traffic into two distinct channels and then would give Nextel some $3 billion worth of extra spectrum in exchange for sacrificing space to protect public safety communications. FCC staff are backing the Nextel plan, and the commission is expected to vote on it later this month.
Yet another Bush administration official has praised for the offshoring of U.S. jobs. U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow recently told the Cincinnati Inquirer that outsourcing is a good corporate move, saying that many business activities can be done just as well or better at a lower cost.
A confidential report about safety on Summer Olympics construction sites around Athens, Greece, paints a new, grim picture of its cost. Between 2001 and 2003, at least 13 workers have been killed on work sites and more than 1,000 have been injured. Two main factors are cited for the carnage. Overtime laws are being abused as contractors rush to finish jobs in order to collect hefty bonuses from the Greek government, and money mandated by law to be spent on health and safety efforts on the work sites has been siphoned off by contractors looking for extra profit.
According to a report released by the General Accounting Office late Friday, the majority of companies in the United States reported owing no taxes from 1996 through 2000. Corporations were divided by nationality, and among American industries, 6 out of 10 paid no taxes, compared to 71% of foreign companies. The report also found a steady increase for all corporations claiming no tax liability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The White House wants yet another round of corporate tax cuts. It believes cutting the tax burden on business stimulates job growth. But historical analysis of U.S. federal tax rates and unemployment recently completed by the Brookings Institution shows no basis for the correlation. Look no further than the Reagan era. He cut taxes in 1981, and in the following 2 years, unemployment went up. Over the decade, taxation slowly rose again, and by 1989, the unemployment rate had fallen.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I was having this discussion in a taxi heading downtown. Rearranging my position on this friend of mine who had a little bit of a breakdown. I said, hey, you know, breakdowns, common breakdowns go, so what are you going to do about it? That's what I have to know.
As a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction, to cease all development of such weapons, and to stop all support for terrorist groups. The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations. It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. 26 minutes before the hour. Could it be that the Bush administration actually doesn't want
June 30th the handover to happen, that they see a train wreck coming, and that this is an easy way out? I frankly don't think so. I just don't think so. I don't think that I think this is just poor planning. It's just absolutely incompetent leadership on the part of the Bush administration to make these kinds of, particularly on the part of Paul Bremer, to be making these kinds of decisions at this point in time in this way. I don't think that they're trying to provoke a situation. I really don't think that they want violence in Iraq in any case. But many people in the world are starting to say this. And what, you know, what this does is it speaks poorly to our credibility. The fact that we have essentially lied our way into a war, and the rest of the world knows it. So here now you've got Ralph Nader. He says, when you plunge our country into war on a platform of fabrications and deceptions, and you bring back thousands of American soldiers who are sick, injured, or dead, and that war is unconstitutionally authorized to begin with, Mr. Bush's behavior qualifies for the high crimes and misdemeanor impeachment clause of the Constitution. He goes on to point out that Bill Clinton was impeached for far less of an offense. He says, lying under oath is not a trivial offense, but it cannot compare with deceiving the American people night after night after night on national television, staging untruths, and rejecting the advice of his advisors. And, you know, telling the American people these just straightforward stories. It's...
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone, because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
Very, very serious, yes. Interesting, Condi Rice is going to be testifying on Thursday. I imagine all the networks will carry it. Certainly it's going to be the hot thing. And no, I don't believe that the Bush administration is trying to whip up a warfare-type disaster in Iraq now in order to divert attention from Condi Rice's testimony, either. I know there are some people who are suggesting that. He's trying to stir things up there so that there will be a big battle, so that they'll have an excuse to have a battle that will start on Thursday morning, just as Condi Rice begins her testimony. Well, time will tell. But I frankly don't think so. Although, you know, if it ever came out that was actually the case, I would have to say it wouldn't be terribly surprising to me, but I don't think so. But here, Condi Rice, this from the New York Times, on 4/7, Condi Rice, in 4 hours of private discussions, the New York Times says this, in 4 hours of private discussions with the 9/11 Commission in January, Ms. Rice was asked about statements she made in 2001 and 2002 that, quote, we could not have imagined that terrorists would use aircraft as weapons by piloting them into buildings. She told the commission that she regretted those comments. Now, this is interesting. So here we have, in the New York Times, the New York Times reporting that in private session, when the 9/11 Commission said to Condi Rice, you know, back in 2001 and 2002, you told the American people that we could not have imagined that terrorists would use aircraft, hijacked aircraft as weapons. He said, we couldn't have imagined it. And she said to the Commission, I regret having said that. In other words, she admitted essentially to the Commission that either she lied or that she was uninformed. But here's where it gets even weirder. This was in January of 2004 that she told the commission that she regretted those denials in 2002. 3 months later, 3 months after, in private, she tells the commission it was wrong to mislead the American people by saying that we could not have imagined that airplanes would be used. 3 months later, on March 22nd, 2004, 2 weeks ago, roughly, she wrote an op-ed piece that was published in the Washington Post in which she says, this is Condoleezza Rice's words, and I quote from her piece, She again falsely claimed, quote, "We received no intelligence. The terrorists were preparing to attack the homeland using airplanes as missiles." But in fact, this is just quite simply not the case. It's just quite simply not the case. Here we have on May 16th, 02, Washington Post. May 18th, 02, CBS News. Quote from the Washington Post article. President Bush and his top advisors were informed by the CIA early last August. Now, this was in 2002 that this was published. And it's referring to before 9/11. Early last August, August of 2001, the terrorists associated with Osama bin Laden had discussed the possibility of hijacking airplanes in August of 2001. This was especially important considering a 1999 report prepared by the Library of Congress for the National Intelligence Council, quote, warned that Osama bin Laden's terrorists could hijack an airliner and fly it into government buildings like the Pentagon, end quote. The report specifically said, quote, suicide bombers belonging to our Al-Qaeda's martyrdom battalion could crash land an aircraft packed with high explosives into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the CIA, or the White House, end quote. Los Angeles Times, on the 27th of August, of September of 01, this was 3 weeks after 9/11, the administration was explicitly warned in July 2001 that, quote, Islamic terrorists might attempt to kill President Bush and other leaders by crashing an airliner into the Genoa Summit of Industrialized Nations, end quote. And the New York Times of April 4th, 2004, quote, warnings during the summer of 2001 were more dire and more specific than generally recognized. Descriptions of the threat were communicated repeatedly to the highest levels within the White House in more than 40 briefings. Mr. Bush was told by George J. Tenet, the director of Central Intelligence, of threats involving Al-Qaeda. A congressional inquiry into intelligence activities before 9/11 found 12 reports over a seven-year period suggesting that terrorists might use airplanes as weapons. So it'll be interesting to see what Condi says about this, since, first she said, oh, we never could have imagined it. Then she went before the commission in January of this year and said, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. And then in the Washington Post 2 weeks ago, she says it again. This is before she realized she was going to have to testify under oath. She thought she still wouldn't have to. And claim number two, Rice told the commission, this is from New York Times again, Rice told the commission in the private session that she should have said, I could not have imagined, according to one official familiar with the testimony, making it clear that some in the intelligence community knew about those threats, but that she did not. Mr. McCormick said information about possible use of airplanes as missiles to destroy buildings was not briefed to her prior to that statement in May 2002. Okay, so here's the fact. This is from David Sirota, the Center for American Progress. Even if Rice missed all 12 previous intelligence reports, noting that, quote, terrorists might use airplanes as weapons, end quote, it is impossible for Rice to claim she had no knowledge of such a plot, considering she accompanied the president to the 2001 G8 summit in Genoa, where she and the administration were explicitly warned that, quote, Islamic terrorists might attempt to kill President Bush and other leaders by crashing an airliner into the summit, end quote. So we're going to find out. Maybe. That's going to be, this is why it's going to be high drama Thursday morning. You know, is Condi going to be asked these questions? Here's our Bush-Cheney 04 bumper sticker for the day, compassionate colonialism. And I was just handed this story, Marines open fire on rebel-held mosque. U.S. Marines pressing an offensive on Fallujah have bombed a central mosque and killed up to 40 Sunni Muslim insurgents holed up inside. This is not going to go well. Agence France-Presse quoted Lieutenant Colonel Brennan Byrne as saying there were as many as 40 rebels inside the mosque. They quote the Lieutenant Colonel, the American Lieutenant Colonel, is saying, quote, we want to kill the people inside, end quote. Now, this is, this is tough. I mean, this is, this is, being published all around the world. The officer said a Cobra helicopter gunship fired a Hellfire missile at the mosque, then an aircraft dropped a laser-guided precision bomb to avoid nearby residents. He said the rebels were using mosques to fire on Marines and to hide weapons. In it, the U.S. says it's looking into reports that its missiles had hit the mosque. A Bush administration official told AP, "We've seen those reports and we're looking into it." But at the Pentagon, defense officials said they had received no such reports. This is day three of Operation Vigilant Resolve, going after the guys who killed and mutilated the four American private civilian, we call them contractors, they're these security guys, you know, in the security force last week. Payback. This is sad. And at the same time, now we have the GOP. This another fascinating story. Now let's hear one more little clip here from George. These are so interesting.
If we know Saddam Hussein has dangerous weapons today, and we do, does it make any sense for the world to wait to confront him as he grows even stronger and develops even more dangerous weapons?
Apparently it didn't, at least in George's mind. Inside the marble floored palace hall that serves as the press office of the U.S.-led coalition, this an Associated Press story by Jim Crane, Dateline Baghdad. This is one of the palaces, one of Saddam's palaces, for the U.S.-led coalition. Republican Party operatives lead a team of Americans who promote mostly good news about Iraq. You think this war, so-called war, has not been politicized? You think the Democrats are the ones who are politicizing Iraq? Dan Senior, a former press secretary for Spencer Abraham, the Michigan Republican who is now energy secretary, heads the office that includes a large number of former Bush campaign workers, political appointees, and ex-Capitol Hill staffers. More than one-third of the U.S. civilian workers in the press office have GOP ties, running an enterprise the critics see as an outpost of Bush's reelection effort, with Iraq a top concern. They're producing things like a news release that they sent out last month that said, beautification plan for Baghdad, ready to begin. Another one had a headline, "The reality is nothing like what you see on television." No, don't look at those pictures. Don't look at those pictures on TV. Don't look at that man behind the screen. The U.S. team stands in deep contrast to the British team that works alongside it, almost all of whom are civil or foreign service employees, not political appointees. Many of the British in Iraq display regional knowledge or language skills that most of the Americans lack. But they are good Republicans. And this will be a campaign issue. It's already been made one. George Bush's first ads featured a flag-draped coffin being carried out of 9/11. Now, of course, it was staged, but nonetheless, you know, we can't see coffins coming home from Iraq, but we can see them in his ads.
This is a massive stockpile of biological weapons and is capable of killing millions. We know that the regime has produced thousands of tons of chemical agents, including mustard gas, sarin nerve gas, VX nerve gas.
We know because Donald Rumsfeld sold him the ingredients during the George Bush Sr. administration. Gee, what a surprise. So, moving along, new evidence that Bush pushed the war Iraq right after 9/11. The White House continues to deny this from the Daily Mislead. The White House continues to deny that the president immediately began planning an invasion of Iraq in the days after 9/11, calling such charges revisionist history and claiming Iraq was to the side immediately after the attacks. But new revelations by a former top British official confirm that immediately after 9/11, President Bush started planning to use the terrorist attacks as a justification for war in Iraq. A justification despite having no proof that Iraq had any connection to Al-Qaeda or 9/11. According to a report in a new edition of Vanity Fair, former British ambassador to the United States, Christopher Meyer, said that the Bush administration, that President Bush made it clear at a dinner with Prime Minister Tony Blair 9 days after 9/11 that it was his plan to invade Iraq. 9 days after 9/11. 10 minutes before the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. Stay tuned.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Biologists in Colorado have helped a native fish survive serious pollution in its gene pool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The greenback cutthroat trout once filled rivers in Colorado on the eastern slope of the Continental Divide. But people started putting sport fish like rainbow trout in those rivers, and the newcomers were hard on the old-timers. The cutthroats were crowded out of their natural habitat. They also started to crossbreed with their new neighbors, and they lost some of their genetic identity in the process. That's turning around thanks to some dedicated biologists and Rocky Mountain waterfalls. Andrew Martin is a biologist at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he studies the genetic traits of the cutthroat trout. He says the first step to restoring it required finding cutthroats that were untainted by crossbreeding. The purebreds were taken to hatcheries, and their offspring were reintroduced in the streams high in the Rocky Mountains. Martin says the offspring are in waters that are free of foreign fish and isolated by waterfalls.
The trout are only in the highest elevation streams that are separated from downstream places by big waterfalls, so fish can't get above these waterfalls. It's the only way we can keep them native because there's so many introduced species now that they can't persist down lower where all the introduced species are.
The greenback cutthroat trout is actually native to a large area at lower elevations, but most of that watershed is now dominated by non-native fish. Martin says this project is working simply because a group of people took action to save a unique creature.
If we know that the conditions are deteriorating so much in this one place that the species could potentially blink off the planet, people start to care.
In this case, the people who care include members of Trout Unlimited and people in the Colorado Division of Wildlife and two federal agencies. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. Congressman Henry Waxman has written a letter to Governor Keene and Mr. Hamilton, the two heads of the 9/11 Commission. And in it, he points out that the president of Egypt, Mubarak, said, if you invade Iraq, you will create 100 bin Ladens. I mean, this is so much the tar baby syndrome, you know, the Brer Rabbit syndrome. I'm mixing up my Uncle Remus stories. Brer Rabbit, as bin Laden as Brer Rabbit, you know, please don't throw me in that briar patch. Bin Laden, you know, please don't come after me with missiles and bombs and blow up cities and kill civilians. And now we've got, you know, solder, you know, and please don't send a rocket into my mosque. It's exactly what they want. We're playing right into their hands. 1-866-889-8894, the last call of the hour. David in Santa Fe. What's up, David?
Hey, Tom. I was talking to a friend of mine the other night, and we were discussing Condi Rice's upcoming testimony. And he said to me that on September 12th or 13th, he read an article in the paper. He lives in San Diego. He read an article in the paper that reported Willie Brown, the mayor of San Francisco at the time, I think, said that he was so glad that he got a call from Washington not to fly on September 11th. And the reporter asked him, who called you? And he said, Condi Rice. Now, I have never heard this before. Have you?
No, I have not. We do know that there was a meeting of Pentagon officials scheduled for 9/11 in New York City that was called off the day before on 9/10. And there are other, you know, odd coincidences. John Ashcroft stopped flying on commercial aircraft, things like that. But I've not heard that story. So let's consider that uncorroborated, David. And why don't you see if you can track it down? A good Google search, you ought to be able to find something out on it. If you get anything, call me back. We'll share it with people. Thanks
okay.
for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to answer, no, I don't think so. Exposing the con and conservative.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me.
for me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi insurgents killed as many as a dozen American Marines Tuesday in an attack on their position in the city of Ramadi near the Sunni hotbed of Fallujah, a U.S. defense official said. The official, who asked not to be identified, said initial reports indicated that dozens of Iraqis assaulted the Marine position near the governor's palace in Ramadi. The defense official also said it was not clear exactly who had mounted the fierce attack on the Marines about 60 miles west of Baghdad in the so-called Sunni Triangle. The area is a hotbed of support for the regime of former President Saddam Hussein. The Marine deaths bring the death toll for U.S. soldiers to 31 for the week. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry suggested Tuesday that George W. Bush may have set the June 30th deadline for turning over control of Iraq to an interim government for political reasons in a National Public Radio interview to be broadcast Wednesday. Kerry later said he hopes the date has nothing to do with the November 2nd presidential election. Asked what he meant in his statement to NPR, Kerry told reporters that the Bush administration wanted to get the troops out and get the transfer out of the way as fast as possible without regard to the stability of Iraq, adding the test ought to be the stability of Iraq, not an arbitrary date. Americans haven't abandoned their support of the decision to use military force in Iraq, but they're increasingly skeptical about George W. Bush's handling of the situation. Bush's overall job approval is at 43%, a low point for his presidency, according to a poll released Monday by the Pew Research Center. 47% disapprove of Bush's job performance. In the aftermath of last week's grisly deaths of four mercenaries in Fallujah, 53% of Americans disapprove of the way Bush is handling Iraq, while 40% approve. 6 in 10 approved in mid-January. More after this.
Like most people, you've probably got a calendar or a day planner to help you keep track of important dates. But there are some things in life that we can't put on our calendars because we don't know when or if they'll happen. Things like emergencies, disasters, or even a fire. So prepare for the unexpected today by establishing a family disaster plan with help from your local Red Cross. When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. Help prepare your community by visiting redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
An alleged cookie-snatching burglar in Utah just couldn't help answering the phone at the victim's home twice. Detectives say a man broke into a Riverdale home Friday afternoon and is suspected of stealing a power drill and cookies. The man's undoing came when he answered the phone when it rang. The caller, the homeowner's daughter, immediately hung up and called her mother to tell her someone was in the house. Then the mother called and the man not only answered again but identified himself. He was arrested after leaving the house, walking through the neighborhood. The man claimed that he left the cookies at the house and was just coming back to get them. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
You can tell when a corporation has been caught doing bad things just by watching television. Not the news, the commercials. The stinkier the corporation, the more commercials you'll see extolling the pure sweetness of the company. The latest to saturate the airwaves with ads is Halliburton. And does it ever need them? Dick Cheney's old outfit has a heap of stink on it, starting with the fact that it magically got some $9 billion worth of no-bid contracts from the Bush-Cheney Pentagon to provide such services in occupied Iraq as gasoline, running the mess halls, and bath towels for the GIs. And Halliburton has been ripping us off on all of this stuff. The company is now under assorted criminal investigations for grossly overcharging us on the gasoline, serving spoiled food in the mess halls, and supplying towels bearing its own logo, charging $3 each for them when non-logo towels are much cheaper. Halliburton has gotten so stinky that it's become a political issue in the presidential campaign. Even George W. has had to criticize its profiteering. So now, we're suddenly subjected to ads showing Halliburton accomplishing miracles in Iraq. Ads that use our soldiers and the Iraqi people as props to justify its bilking of U.S. taxpayers. How defensive is Halliburton? So defensive that it felt compelled to make an ad trying to separate itself from its cozy ties to Cheney. We're serving the troops, says this hilarious pitch, because of what we know, not who we know. But the company has also gone on the offensive, in both senses of that word. Its CEO, in a statement that is both cynical and whiny, attacked all who dare criticize Halliburton, saying that they are guilty of political profiteering. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a greedhead! Halliburton profiteers on this war, uses some of those war profits to whitewash its actions, and then tries labeling its taxpaying critics as profiteers.
Well, I wonder who that could be. Can I help you?
Ah, everybody, run for your lives!
A pack of crazed baboons. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a quieter floor with Blactanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Blactanium holds onto nails better. That means your subflooring won't rub against them and will be less likely to squeak. Blactanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too.
Who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hey, welcome back, my friends. Thanks to Detective Brudka in our chat room. You can get to the chat room on the Tom Hartman radio program by going to TomHartman.com and click on the chat room link. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And if you're an AOL member or a CompuServe member, just plug in your AOL or CompuServe screen name and password, and boom, you'll be a member. You know, join the forum and drop into the chat room. If you're not a member, you can sign up. There's no charge for it. It's just, you know, they ask for an email address to keep out spammers and stuff. But anyhow, one of the folks in our chat room gave me the link to the story that the caller in the last hour, just at the end of the last hour, was talking about. It was published in the San Francisco Chronicle, which online is sfgate.com. And it was published on Wednesday, September 12th. 2001, the day after 9/11. And here's the first couple paragraphs. For Mayor Willie Brown, the first sign that something was amiss came late Monday when he got a call from what he described. Keep in mind, Tuesday was the attack. When he got a call from what he described as his airport security, a full 8 hours before yesterday's string of terrorist attacks, advising him that Americans should be cautious about their air travel. The mayor, who was booked to fly to New York yesterday morning from San Francisco International Airport, said the call, quote, didn't come in any alarming fashion, which is why I'm hesitant to make an alarming statement, end quote. In fact, at the time, he didn't pay it much mind. It was not an abnormal call, he said. I'm always concerned if my flight is going to be on time, and they always alert me when I ought to be careful. End quote. Exactly where the call came from is a bit of a mystery, notes the San Francisco Chronicle. The mayor would say only that it came from, quote, my security people at the airport, end quote. So, no, it didn't apparently come from Condoleezza Rice. Mike McCarron, Assistant Deputy Secretary, Assistant Deputy Director at SFO, San Francisco International Airport, said the FAA routinely issues security notices about possible threats. He said two or three such notices have been received in the past couple months, but none in recent days. Whatever the case, Brown didn't think about it again until he was up, dressed, and waiting for a ride for his ride to the airport for an 8 a.m. flight to New York, where he was to attend a state retirement board meeting. That's when he turned on the TV and, like millions of other Americans, saw the twin towers of the World Trade Center crumble and the Pentagon go up in smoke. So he apparently got some sort of a warning, but who knows? Is it a big deal or not? Interesting story. Interesting story. See, this is the kind of stuff that I mean, you just don't know. If you pull on this thread hard enough, you don't know what is going to unravel. It might be nothing. It might be, as Willie Brown said or implied, just, you know, a routine, hey, heads up, you know, there may be a problem. Or it may be, well, the question always is, coincidence or conspiracy? The New York Times Magazine's cover story this week details how the Bush administration, through subtle regulatory changes, scuttled what would have been one of the greatest advances in clean air in the nation's history. This is from the Center for American Progress. By the way, I've got a bunch of stories here. I've got some stuff on the environment, the White House and chemical leaks, Bush helping corporate contributors. An interesting article about how Ralph Nader is now playing a significant role in the election and looks like he's going to be a spoiler again. If there's something on your mind and you'd like to bring into the conversation here in the third hour of our program, I always like to open up the third hour a little more, pretty much any topic you want. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Feel free to call. Anyhow, back to this story. In 1977, Congress passed an amendment to the Clean Air Act requiring older power plants to use the best available pollution control technology. What this law said basically was if you upgrade your power plant, then you have to use the state-of-the-art in terms of pollution control. It makes sense, doesn't it? If you're going to increase the amount of energy you're producing, you're going to increase your emissions. If you're going to increase your emissions, then you have to scrub it at the state of the art, whatever the state of the art of the technology is. And, you know, given that, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, about 30,000 Americans every year have their lives shortened as a consequence just of the soot and stuff that comes out of these plants. Well, the Bush administration said, no, we can't have that. Executives of companies that ran afoul of the Clean Air Act before the Bush administration's revisions were major contributors to the president. First Energy President Anthony Alexander, Reliant Resources CEO Steve Ledbetter, Reliance Chairman Don Jordan. These companies were sued by the EPA. They were all pioneers in Bush's 2000 campaign, meaning they raised at least $100,000. This is just mind-boggling. The Bush administration is backtracking on regulations to reduce dangerous mercury emissions from power plants is meeting widespread disapproval. Yeah, thank goodness. Even seven Republicans out of 45 U.S. senators wrote a letter to EPA Administrator Mike Leavitt saying, hey, wait a minute, we don't think mercury is a good thing, and we would like you to reduce the mercury levels the way that... The way that the law requires. Senator Lamar Alexander, Republican of Tennessee, writes that the new mercury proposals, the administration's plans to cut back on our protection from mercury, increase the levels of mercury that will be allowed into the air from our smokestacks, quote, fall far short of what the law requires, and they fail to protect the health of our children and the environment. The senators were joined in the letter by attorneys general from 10
states. 10 states. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 14 minutes past the hour. And Dean in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Dean, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I had some comments about what's going on in Iraq right now. And I guess mine are inspired by the Art of War, Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we couldn't pull the rug right out of under all the terrorism or the attacks right now by completely pulling out and creating a vacuum there such that, you know, you can't give anybody freedom. And if the Iraqis really had to, if we did give them nothing to fight against, like right now the U.S. is the lightning rod for all the hostility and all the pent-up emotions and so forth. But what if we did pull out? And what if we left the Iraqis? I mean, obviously, Iran and Syria and others may try to get headway there, but I have a feeling that the Iraqis are a lot more independent and freedom-loving than we're giving them credit for, and they would have to quickly sort out, you know, what was going to work for them. And I have a feeling with help from, say, other countries, they would restore their electricity and other things. I can't help but feel that this administration is purposely perhaps inviting these attacks in order to go into Iran or Syria, you know, using it as a prelude to put more troops in there. You know, I was over in Europe on business, and people there assume that we went to war for oil in Israel. And this is our chance to show the world that, hey, no, here, you know, freedom is something you have to, you can't give to anyone. You have to, you know, take. And I'm wondering if we, if that's the only thing that, you know, we can salvage at this point. I mean, I can't.
Well, here's the problem. And Dean, your question assumes that Iraqis think like we do. And you know, people are people all around the world on the one hand. But on the other hand, the United States has a 227-year history of at least talking about democracy as a high ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And that has not, by and large, been the case in most of the Middle East, and certainly not in Iraq. There have been, you know, small eruptions, you know, they're throwing off the British in the 1920s. But my take on it is that what would happen if we pulled out right now is that there would be a civil war, and it would be a really, really bloody, messy civil war. And it's not anything that would be to the advantage of the United States or anybody anywhere in the world. It's something. It would be a terrible tragedy, and as is always the case in civil wars, you would have civilians bearing the brunt of the casualties. I don't think that we can allow that, even though we created the situation that's going to make it happen.
It just seems like it's so. I don't know. I mean, it's like the longer we're there, we seem to be the lightning rod for all the pent up stuff, and nothing is really being dealt with.
Well, the solution is very straightforward. John Kerry's laid it out. A bunch of other people have laid it out, and it's to get to internationalize for the transitional period until the Iraqis actually have a competent army and police force, and they're moving in that direction. I mean, we actually are apparently doing some good things in that regard with our hard-earned tax dollars. We can't rebuild our schools in America, but we're rebuilding schools in Iraq. We're pulling police officers off the streets of the United States, but we're putting police officers on the streets in Iraq. So, you know,
I think one of the questions I have is whether other various groups that would like to see the United States taken down aren't deliberately withholding support and otherwise along those lines in order to see us just slowly bleed this country of resources, of the will to do anything anymore. And
groups such as?
Such as various other maybe Islamic groups or perhaps old communist generals in Russia and China. And it sounds like, you know, a John Birch Society thing. But I think there are a lot of people that do have a dislike of the United States and would be willing, they can't confront us directly, but certainly can use various tactics to slowly just bleed us dry in terms of having hot spots erupt around the world. And
yeah, I mean, you know, you can't deny the fact that there are countries around the world and people around the world who wish us ill. I think that what's
because of Bush and some of these policies. I mean, we have just
right. That's where I was going with that. I think that, for example, our European allies, who, if we had been able to actually prove before the United Nations that there were weapons of mass destruction, had said, you know, you prove it, we're with you. And we never proved it. And Hans Blix was saying, hey, give me a couple more weeks and I'll know for sure. And the Europeans were saying, give him a couple more weeks. And we said, no, you know, we're not going to do that. We're going to, Georgie wants his war right now. We got to have it in time for the election, you know, get it over with and get that bounce that his daddy missed.
Yeah, I just feel like this is such a solemn time in the nation's history for ourselves with a presidential election coming up that we have all these other things going on instead of being directed here at home and looking at what are we going to do, you know, to put this country back on some sort of solid footing again. It's such a tragedy. And when I look back at Vietnam, for instance, I mean, Ho Chi Minh, at one point we were kind of supporting him.
Yeah.
If I understand correctly, when
originally,
he went to Paris,
yeah.
And so in a sense, we were fighting the French through Ho Chi Minh for a while, and then he became, you know, he turned into the nationalist that we didn't think he was, and then all of a sudden we were fighting him. It's like, it's so convoluted, it seems like, at these deepest levels. So.
It is, all over. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Bye.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Wakefield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
You.
What?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Hmm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the...
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is
rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it took a little time, but I guess you finally learned that promises get broken and bridges do get burned. You've been sipping.
And we're doing it with the world. We are burning bridges and breaking promises. 109,794,443,444,446,447,000 has been spent by the United States in Iraq. Now, what does that mean in terms of other things that could be done? 15,532,606 children could have attended a year of Head Start for what we have spent so far in Iraq. 15 million. 47,063,215 children could have had health insurance for an entire year. 47 million. That's for just what we have spent so far in Iraq. With just the money that we have spent so far in Iraq, we could have hired 2,091,400 public school teachers for one entire year. 2,091,400 teachers. With the $109,798,523,000 that we have spent so far in Iraq, we could have provided 4-year scholarships at public universities to 2,784,997 students. I have the public housing figures here in just a moment, but first let me just take this call here. We've got Paul in Detroit City. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Just wanted to mention that this last Monday, the Los Angeles Times was awarded 5 Pulitzer Prizes. And one of the prizes was for a report that they clearly stated that Walmart has been driving down hourly wages in the United States. They received a Pulitzer Prize for that report.
Right. And it's the opposite of the union effect. The more unionization you have, the higher wages go, and the stronger the middle class becomes. The more Walmarts you have, the lower wages go, the more people fall out of the middle class and into working poor.
That's right. And also the report also described clearly how Walmart had set up a tremendous network in China of 17 to 31 cents an hour, 7 days a week factory workers.
Yeah. Yeah. And what do we do about this, Paul?
Well, there's something called regulations, I believe, to protect our economy and our citizens and our health care and the politicians should wake up. It isn't just for starters.
It's time to go back to the Sherman Antitrust Act. It's time to go back to laws that are already on the books, to enforcing laws, you know, that Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing and haven't been enforced since the Reagan administration, that say that when a corporation gets so large that its behavior is destructive to competition and destructive to communities, then we say you can't do that. You know, that we just say to the corporation, sorry, you can't do that.
Thank you, Tom, for your service.
You're welcome, Paul. Thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. Yeah, we it's just, you know, these are the steps that we have to take. I mean, it's just so very straightforward. This is not new stuff. This is not rocket science, and it's not new stuff. We have faced these things before in the United States, and we have responded to them appropriately by saying, as Teddy Roosevelt, who's one of the most articulate of the people who, you know, led the charge on this, saying, you know, no, the small and medium businesses are the backbone of America, and very large corporations are welcome to function in our country, but not at the expense of the commons or of the working people. There has to be rules for the game of business, and those rules have to equalize the relationship of power between labor and management. Very, very straightforward stuff. And allow for competition, and allow for small and medium-sized businesses. It's getting harder and harder in America for small businesses to start up and really succeed in any significant way because of just the incredible power of monopoly. It's time to bring back the anti-monopoly laws. Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking?
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
There's a battle brewing at the Federal Communications Commission pitting cell phone providers against police and firefighters from around the country. It seems wireless phones cause increased amounts of interference to public safety communication systems because they use radio frequencies very close to each other. Cell phone interference is so bad that the FCC's been studying the issue. Two proposals to fix the interference are now in play. One, backed by police and firefighters and the majority of the wireless industry, would require cell phone companies to immediately address any problems as they crop up. The other plan, backed by Nextel Communications, would divide cell phone and public safety radio traffic into two distinct channels and then would give Nextel some $3 billion worth of extra spectrum in exchange for sacrificing space to protect public safety communications. FCC staff are backing the Nextel plan, and the commission's expected to vote on it later this month.
Yet another Bush administration official has praised for the offshoring of U.S. jobs. U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow recently told the Cincinnati Inquirer that outsourcing is a good corporate move, saying that many business activities can be done just as well or better at a lower cost.
A confidential report about safety on Summer Olympics construction sites around Athens, Greece, paints a new grim picture of its cost. Between 2001 and 2003, at least 13 workers have been killed on work sites and more than 1,000 have been injured. Two main factors are cited for the carnage. Overtime laws are being abused as contractors rush to finish jobs in order to collect hefty bonuses from the Greek government, and money mandated by law to be spent on health and safety efforts on the work sites has been siphoned off by contractors looking for extra profit.
According to a report released by the General Accounting Office late Friday, the majority of companies in the United States reported owing no taxes from 1996 through 2000. Corporations were divided by nationality, and among American industries, 6 out of 10 paid no taxes, compared to 71% of foreign companies. The report also found a steady increase for all corporations claiming no tax liability.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The White House wants yet another round of corporate tax cuts. It believes cutting the tax burden on business stimulates job growth. But historical analysis of U.S. federal tax rates and unemployment recently completed by the Brookings Institution shows no basis for the correlation. Look no further than the Reagan era. He cut taxes in 1981, and in the following 2 years, unemployment went up. Over the decade, taxation slowly rose again, and by 1989, the unemployment rate had fallen.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
bring democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Seeing history repeat itself. 26 minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman here with you. Remember when Walter Cronkite reported that the Shah of Iran had fallen? It's the Shah who we had installed. We overthrew, what is it, Mossadegh was his name, as I recall, the former head of Iran, and installed the Shah, good old Pahlavi. And then Walter Cronkite told us.
Shah of Iran left his country today on a vacation from which he may never return. There were celebrations in the streets of Tehran.
Despite fuel rationing, tens of thousands surged into the center of Tehran, honking their car horns, flashing the lights, and waving windshield wipers. Today there were more shouts of Yankee go home.
A victory for the people was how Ayatollah Khomeini described it, his friends and followers clearly agreeing as the 78-year-old exiled Muslim leader emerged from his cottage near Paris after learning the Shah had left Iran.
The fall of the Shah of Iran. And so then we have Dick Cheney making some, you know, somewhat revealing statements. This was his Meet the Press, September 14th of last year. Some of his comments. And notice how, first of all, he tries to weave together the idea that Saddam Hussein, this is part of this massive disinformation campaign that was carried on by this administration, weaving together the idea that Saddam Hussein had something to do with terrorism and 9/11 and Al-Qaeda. You know, that there was some relationship. You know, he was technically, well, you judge for yourself.
If we're successful in Iraq, if we can stand up a good representative government in Iraq.
These are huge ifs, of course.
Secures the region so that it never again becomes a threat to its neighbors.
Never again.
United States, so it's not pursuing weapons of mass destruction, so that it's not a safe haven for terrorists.
Now, see, the statement assumes that there are, and so people are going, oh yeah, okay, yeah, we want to have a country that's not a safe haven for terrorists and doesn't have one. And now all of a sudden we've got a country that is Fort Lauderdale. Good. Cheney continues.
We will have struck a major blow right at the heart of the base, if you will, the geographic base of the.
Now he has to qualify the geographic base because it's certainly not the base of 9/11, but he continues.
Terrorists who've had us under assault now for many years, but most especially on 9/11.
9/11, there you go. And
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. And all around the world, people are watching that going, Yes, suddenly it makes sense. Suddenly it all makes sense. George W. Bush commenting on the situation.
Iraq has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes and other equipment needed for gas centrifuges, which are used to enrich uranium for nuclear weapons.
Turns out it was a lie.
If the Iraqi regime is able to produce, buy, or steal an amount of highly enriched uranium a little larger than a single softball, it could have a nuclear weapon in less than a year.
And now we know that Bush knew that that was a lie when he said it.
We've experienced the horror of September the 11th.
Tying them two together.
We have seen that those who hate America are willing to crash airplanes into buildings full of innocent people. Our enemies would be no less willing. In fact, they would be eager to use biological or chemical or a nuclear weapon.
And therefore, we must attack Iraq, said the President of the United States.
Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, I think it's so important for us to, from time to time, revisit the statements that this administration made before, you know, that drove us into war. It is absolutely extraordinary, The brazenness, particularly what we know now about what they knew then, that they knew that these statements were simply not statements of truth. Well, moving along, the economy. Here's a few things. Once again, President Bush refuses to put his money where his mouth is, reports David Sirota, the Center for American Progress. Bush last week announced plans to double the number of workers who complete federal training each year from the current 200,000 to 400,000. This is a quote from Bush. But he's putting no new money into the effort. How are you going to do that? You're going to double the number of people who graduate from job training from 200,000 to 400,000, but we're not going to pay for it. Not a penny. In fact, since he became president, George Bush has cut more than $1 billion out of job training and vocational education programs. Now, maybe that's because he's figured out the same thing that Americans that people all over America are figuring out, and that is that, you know, with our blue collar jobs going to cheap manual labor nations like China, and our white collar jobs going to cheap white collar labor nations like India, what do you train for? I mean, burger flipping? Learn how to be a good waiter. You can make excellent tips. Somebody actually made that argument to me recently. These guys in these restaurants, they're making pretty good money. Maybe a few of them. It's not like that's something that you should say, Johnny, I want you to go to school today and get good grades because someday you may grow up to be a waiter in a fancy New York restaurant. It's just remarkable. Just remarkable. There may be some good news from the White House as President Bush plans to remove support for Ahmed Chalabi. We'll see. We'll see. The U.S. News and World Report, their Washington Whisper column, they said, and I'm quoting the U.S. News and World Report, President Bush, we hear, has come down against letting Ahmed Chalabi get the prime minister's slot in post-war Iraq. Insiders think Bush is siding with the CIA and state, which don't think Chalabi has much support inside Iraq. Gee, what a surprise. The guy's been out of the country for 40 years. He's a convicted bank swindler. He's been sentenced to 20-some-odd years of hard labor in Jordan, the next country over. And the people of Iraq don't think he should be their prime minister? What a surprise. The article goes on to say, this is a U.S. News and World Report, it's a blow to the Pentagon and the vice president's office, which believed in the westernized Iraqi, this being Chalabi, who gets credit for talking the White House into war. They go on to point out that Chalabi is continuing to receive $340,000 a month from the Defense Intelligence Agency. Boy, how do you get that job? Hey, pay me a third of $1 million a month, and I'll tell you that there's weapons of mass destruction, even though there aren't. And then when you've got egg all over your face, I'll become president of the country, prime minister of the country. But keep paying me. This guy, you know, redefines whatever the word is. On it goes. Workers not getting paid for their time. I don't know. Did you see this in the New York Times? The New York Times reported illegal doctoring of hourly employees' time records is far more prevalent than most Americans believe. There are a growing number of lawsuits and settlements against a wide range of businesses who shave time from their workers to improve their bottom line. This gets back to, you know, what has happened in the United States? Where are our workplace protections? Where are our worker protections? When are we going to level the playing field? When are we going to say, hey, you know, we need to have fair labor policies. We need to have fair trade policies, but we also need to have fair labor policies. More than a dozen Walmart employees have reported, quote, managers have altered time records to shortchange employees, end quote. Experts say that many managers, This is a quote. Many managers, whether at discount stores or fast food restaurants, fear losing their job if they fail to keep costs down. So what are they doing? They're shaving 15 minutes off everybody's time, half hour here, half hour there. Most employees don't notice. They're not doing the math on their paychecks every week. And the company's laughing all the way to the bank. Another factor, and I quote, an increasing part of managers' compensation comes in bonuses paid on minimizing costs or maximizing profits, end quote. Many employees, including those at Walmart, quote, receive no paper time records, making it hard to challenge management when their paychecks are inexplicably low. Walmart is doing with pay stubs what they want us to do, the Republicans want us to do with voting machines. No paper record. No record. Yes, we know you worked, but, you know, no, we're not going to give you a paper record showing when you worked. Mind-boggling. William Rivers Pitt, who has a website called Truth Out, wrote a great op-ed piece last week. It's called The Line. And in it, he quotes some of the people around Richard Clark about, you know, what's going on in this administration. Tom Martins, for example. Tom Martins, who was the National Security Director for Nuclear Non-Proliferation. And here's a quote from Martins. The NSC Director for Nuclear Non-Proliferation worked for both Clinton and Bush. Here are his own words. Speaking of Richard Clark, Clark was a colleague of mine for 15 months in the White House under both Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. Subsequently, I moved to the U.S. State Department as Deputy Coordinator for Counterterrorism, and I worked with him and his staff there before and after 9/11. The Bush administration did ignore the threat of terrorism. I'm quoting the Bush administration's own National Security Director for Nuclear Nonproliferation, Tom Martins. The Bush administration did ignore the threat of terrorism. It was focused on tax cuts, building a ballistic missile system, withdrawing from the ABM treaty, and rejecting the Kyoto Protocol. Martins goes on to say, Clark's gutsy insider recounting of events relating to 9/11 is an important public service from my perspective. The Bush administration has practiced the most cynical, opportunistic form of politics I have witnessed in my 28 years in government, hijacking legitimate American outrage and patriotism over 9/11 to conduct a preordained war against Saddam Hussein. What are they going to do to this guy? What are they going to find out about what his wife does for a living? Tom Martins, National Security Council Director for Nuclear Nonproliferation for George W. Bush. What about Clark's former deputy, Roger Cressy? As William Rivers Pitts notes, Cressy is one of four eyewitnesses to an exchange between Clark and Bush, which took place in the White House Situation Room on 9/12. Bush pressed Clark three times to find evidence that Iraq was responsible for the 9/11 attacks. According to Cressy, Condi Rice was there, too. Is this going to show up in her testimony on Thursday? We'll see. Here's Donald Carrick, a three-star general who served as National Security Advisor, Deputy National Security Advisor under Clinton, and stayed on for several months in the Bush White House. Sidney Blumenthal, March 25th, wrote that Stephen Hadley, his replacement in the White House, Carrick wrote Stephen Hadley a two-page memo. It was classified, Carrick told Blumenthal. He said, and we're now quoting Donald Carrick, three-star general, national security advisor to Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. Quote, I said they being the Bush administration, they needed to pay attention to Al-Qaeda and counterterrorism. I said we were going to be struck again. We didn't know where or when. They never once asked me a question. Nor did I see them having any serious discussion about it. They didn't feel it was an imminent threat the way the Clinton administration did. Handley did not respond to my memo, although I know he had it. I agree with Dick Clark that they saw those problems through an Iraqi prism, but the evidence was not there. Paul O'Neill, I mean, let's get ready for Cotty's testimony here. What did Paul O'Neill? Paul O'Neill says it was all about finding a way to invade Iraq. This was the Iraq invasion planning session months before 9/11. To quote Paul O'Neill, that was the tone to it. The president saying, go find me a way to do this, end quote. He goes on to say, from the very first instance, it was about Iraq. It was about what can we do to change this regime. Day one, these things were laid and sealed. This is the former Secretary of the Treasury. Joe Wilson, of course, we know about his story, and his wife, Greg Thielman, former director of the Office of Strategic Proliferation of Military Issues in the State Department. He said that the documents that said that Niger was a source of uranium were, quote, garbage. In fact, he said they were crude forgeries. When he saw Bush make his claim about the uranium in his State of the Union address, this is exactly what Greg Thielman said. He said, when I saw that, it really blew me away. Not that stupid piece of garbage. My thought was, how did that get into the speech? It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour. Time to bring change to America. And you can do it this November.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
Tom Hartman has a new illustrated book called We the People, A Call to Take Back America.
You mean Tom Hartman has a comic book out?
No, it's an illustrated book that tells the history of America's takeover by multinational corporations and what we, as citizens, can do to take it back.
Illustrated? You mean it has pictures?
Well, it's illustrated the same way a comic book is. Easy and fun, but it's also about a serious topic, the survival of democracy.
How do I get a copy?
It's in bookstores across America and online. You can also find it at buzzflash.com. There's more information at www.tomhartman.com or by calling 1-800-765-1319.
What was that number again?
1-800-765-1319.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio.
If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Kurt in Tacoma, Washington's on the line. Hey, Kurt, what's up?
Well, I was surprised to get on. I've got a couple questions. I'd like to make a longer rant, but in the sake of time.
I think we got about 2.5 minutes here.
Yeah, I think I've said it before, too, but it's not so much the big shame or whatever is not so much Bush doing and saying what he's saying, is that where are the Dems? Where is the media? Why isn't there somebody exposing this to the voting public?
Yeah, here I am.
Well, you're preaching to the choir. It's very enjoyable, educational. I enjoy it, but we need to change the votes of the undecided.
I agree. And I think that Americans are starting to wake up to this. I think that the Democratic primary did a good job of that. I think Ralph Nader's running around ranting about this stuff, and he's getting some press. I mean, today his calling for George Bush's impeachment actually made the Associated Press. These are all good signs, I think.
I quite agree, but I'm looking for the mainstream media, so to speak, where I pick up on it, too. A couple of miscellaneous questions that I've forgotten past because of one reason or another that you brought up in the past is, can you elaborate a little more on the definition or the... Anyway, you mentioned DLC, DNC.
Right.
Was the Liberal Caucus. What other divisions are there that you could say a little bit of what they are and the differences?
Sure.
And you said one's good, one's... So speaking of the DLC, DNC?
Yeah, the DNC is the Democratic National Committee. It's basically the official Democratic Party. And that's, you know, that's whatever that is, and you know, whoever is in charge at the time. When there's a presidential candidate or when the president is a Democrat, that's the person who's in charge. Right now there's not a candidate, and Terry McAuliffe is in charge of that. The DLC, Democratic Leadership Council, is a group that Bill Clinton helped organize back in 1991 that helped get him elected in 92, where basically they said, you know, us Democrats have been taking money from labor and from individuals and, you know, wealthy individuals and whatnot, liberals, as it were, and the Republicans are getting all the money because the corporations have all the money, so we need to start sucking up to the corporations. And that was where the Democratic Leadership Council came from. It was an attempt on the part of the Democratic Party, some within the Democratic Party, to turn the party into Republican light, and it has become a point of major contention within the Democratic Party. You got DLC Democrats and non-DLC Democrats, and that's a point of cleavage that is real significant. Corinne, I got a boogie. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks to Louise Hartman for producing the program, Brad Walrod for pulling together our music. Thanks to RadioPower.org for streaming it around the planet, and White Rose Society for putting up the archives. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
Hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent, progressive radio network that is entirely sponsored by listener donations. We're in the middle of our spring pledge drive to help raise the next quarter. That you can making a donation to Radio Power. Hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent, progressive radio network that is entirely sponsored by listener donations. We're in the middle of our spring pledge drive to help raise funding for the next quarter, and we ask that you consider making a donation to RadioPower.org. Radio Power brings exclusively the Tom Hartman program, which is a wonderful, wonderful progressive program. And we are currently experiencing such a high demand for the Tom Hartman program that our servers are being filled to capacity every day. And what we would really like to do is to be able to expand our server capacity so that more people can get the message, can listen to the Tom Hartman program, and our radio network can continue to grow as it has in the past few months. We also brought on a new talk show host this month, Radio Inside Scoop with Mark Levine. Mark Levine is a former congressional attorney and a Washington insider. He is a Yale Law School graduate. And he brings a perspective to talk radio that is simply not out there today. Mark is a Washington insider. He has numerous connections within the Beltway, and he broadcasts live from Washington, D.C. every Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. here on Radio Power. And Mark has some wonderful guests on his program, and he has the as he likes to call, the inside scoop. He has so many sources within Washington that help him to break stories before even the national news media breaks the stories. And it's just a wonderful high-energy program, and we're very, very proud to have the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine here on RadioPower.org. We also bring you other talk show programs, the Tony Trupiano Show from Michigan Talk Radio, and Peter Werby's Night Call on Sunday night, as well as Rama Schneider's Gur Radio, which he likes to call Mom and Pop Radio. Rama and his wife, Grace, host a two-hour program from Vermont, and it's just a wonderful, low-key Mom and Pop Radio program, like they like to call it. It's just a fabulous program, and it's been getting tremendous feedback. And so we bring you all of these wonderful, truly progressive programs that are fact-filled and that bring a perspective that is unique in talk radio. And for this, we ask that you drop by RadioPower.org and make a donation to our station today so that we can continue to bring you these fabulous progressive talk radio programs. Again, our website is RadioPower.org, and click on the donations link, and you'll find a number of donation options. You can become a member of the station for as little as $5 a month. That's right. For the price of a pizza, you can support Internet Radio. and we can continue to bring you the fabulous programs that we do here on RadioPower.org. This is Shelby LaPree, station manager, thanking you for listening to Radio Power.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, bringing you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. As my longtime listeners know, I used to work as an attorney in Congress, and I was amazed at all the information that I saw there that was never conveyed to the American people. That's why I'm here on the air giving you the Inside Scoop. Our topic today is overtime. I think it's a great example of the kind of news that people in Congress definitely know that's going on, but that the mainstream public often does not. Did you know that the Bush administration wants to cut back on overtime rules, wants to cut back on millions of workers receiving overtime for the first time since overtime began in the New Deal, just following the Great Depression? That's right. The Bush administration is trying to modify the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 to make sure that millions of American workers who presently can receive overtime won't be able to receive it. It's actually a pretty extraordinary move because 80 million Americans right now can receive overtime, and this provision, as I understand it, would cut down on about 8 million Americans' right to receive it. I want you to know the details of the provision. This is something, again, that we can do here on radio that you can't do on TV. You can't do in those sound bites. And that's why I'm really glad to be able to discuss this kind of issue on radio so that you can get the inside scoop on exactly what the Bush administration is doing, how Congress has tried to stop it, and what you can do to help stop this provision yourself. My guest today is going to be Kelly Ross. Now, Kelly Ross is a legislative representative for the AFL-CIO. And he used to be a senior policy advisor to Senator Paul Wellstone, one of the, I think, great senators of our time. May he rest in peace. He also was staff director for the Democrats on the Senate Labor Committee. So he, like me, I guess, is a former staffer. The difference is he focused on labor. I was on Judiciary Committee and Homeland Security Committee. But I know how much staffers know. I have tremendous respect for them, and I'm really looking forward to him being on the air. He is an expert in this provision. He will know the ins and outs of exactly what overtime regulations the Bush administration is trying to change, exactly how it affects you and your life, and he's going to talk about a rally today, this afternoon in Washington. In fact, he's going to talk to me and then run to the rally to protest these overtime provisions. It's really, again, it's important to know when you're, you know, middle-of-the-road worker who doesn't really focus too much on politics, maybe your co-employee, somebody who says, well, I'm not really liberal, I'm not really conservative, when they say, you know, I don't know, maybe Bush hasn't done that bad a job, say, do you value your overtime? Do you care about overtime pay? Do you think if workers get more, work more than 40 hours, they should get time and a half? Or do you think that, you know, hey, time and a half, that's anti-American? I don't think so, and I think Kelly Ross is going to be a great guest. We're going to hear from him in just a bit. And if you want to call in, if you have questions about the overtime provision, or you just want to, you know, speak out on it, you want to know how it affects your life, you want to describe how overtime works in your industry, maybe you're a chef or a nurse or a bookkeeper or a paralegal or a secretary. My understanding is all of these professions will lose overtime. We're going to get the details from Kelly Ross in a minute. The number to call is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-577-2667. It's a toll-free number. And hey, folks, you know, you make the show. This we do here on the Inside Scoop. It's not just about providing information, but about answering your questions, about hearing what you have to say. And you know what? If you defend the Bush administration, if you like cutting down overtime, if you're a big business and you don't want to pay your workers a fair wage, bring it on. Bring it on. Challenge me on the air. Call in. I dare you. 877-57-SCOOP. You know, I've said often that conservatives should be able to debate liberals on these views. If they can't debate us, it's an admission that they know they're wrong. And before we get to the overtime provisions, I do want to talk a little bit about the news today. I couldn't let it go. I've got to talk about the 9/11 Commission. Now, I predicted, I'm proud to say, I predicted all this week and week before that Condoleezza Rice, National Security Advisor to President Bush, was going to be forced to testify. That no matter how many times she said, oh, no, we don't want to set a precedent, she couldn't do it. One, because she was wrong about the precedent. We had National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's guy. He testified. We had Sandy Berger testify. That was Clinton's National Security Advisor while Clinton was president. So, you know, Rice is just wrong about the precedent. Maybe Republicans don't like to let Americans know what their National Security Advisor is up to. But Democratic presidents like Carter and Clinton have done it in the past. So she was just dead wrong. But I also know that the politics of the situation were going to be that, you know, she was going to have to testify. So I'm glad of my prediction. But to me, what struck me is that the Bush administration got in exchange for that permission. They did say, after fighting, you remember, the Bush administration fought the 9/11 Commission every step of the way. They didn't want it to have a commission in the first place. They fought the law. They threatened to veto it when they saw that the American people and Congress really wanted it. Bush signed the law, but then, as you recall, he assigned Henry Kissinger, that great master of open government, that wonderful Secretary of State who doesn't believe in secrecy at all unless he's, you know, bombing Cambodia. Kissinger was going to lead the commission until he found out that if he was on the commission, he'd have to disclose some of his disreputable clients. Didn't want to do that, and so now the commission is in the hands of former Governor Keene and Vice Chairman Lee Hamilton. And the commission, to its credit, all eight members demanded that Condoleezza Rice testify, and they got her to do so. But I want to focus, and if you want to talk about this, you're welcome to call, too. We're going to focus mostly on overtime. In the second half of the hour, excuse me, in the second half of the show, the second hour of the show, if you want to talk about the commission or anything else, feel free to call. But what I found interesting about the commission is President Bush's insistence that if he lets Condoleezza Rice testify, that when he testifies, well, I shouldn't say testify because he refuses to go under oath, when George Bush makes his prepared comments before the 9/11 Commission in private, not under oath, he insists that Dick Cheney sit by his side. He's got to have his vice president right there. Now, I am waiting for the political cartoons to show up in tomorrow's newspaper. I wish I could draw, because I would draw a picture of George Bush sitting on the lap of Dick Cheney, and Dick Cheney would have his hand up his back, and he'd be controlling the mouth of his puppet, George Bush. As I said on this show many times in the past, our president is the boy king. He's Prince George. He's the 10-year-old who became king through no fault of his own, right? I mean, Scalia made Bush king, made Bush president of the United States. And he's like a 10-year-old. He likes to dress up in the flight suit. He likes to say, bring it on. He likes to, he reads speeches, stumbles over them. But we all know that, you know, he really doesn't have the intelligence to speak well. But he's like the boy king in the sense that his father's advisors tell him everything. He gets to do all the ceremonial stuff, just like, you know, you probably do know, the kings of England, one of them would die, and you'd have a 10-year-old, and he'd become king, and he would have, ostensibly, he'd have power. Everyone would say he's the king, but everyone knew who really had the power. It was Dick Cheney and Karl Rove and all the president's men behind him. Well, that was confirmed by Paul O'Neill when he said that if you wanted to get something done, it was Cheney that decided what to do, not George Bush. Cheney called all the shots. Bush was a ceremonial guy. And, you know, Paul O'Neill made it clear that Bush had nothing to say. He would give briefings to the president, talk with Bush for an hour, and whereas former presidents would ask him questions, would engage him, Bush would just listen and maybe zone out. Maybe Bush was zoning out when George Tenet mentioned that Zacharias Moussaoui was captured by the FBI for wanting to steer a plane, but not take it off, take off the plane or land the plane. That was very important. By the way, that's been confirmed in Bush at War by Woodward, pages 4 and 5. I still haven't seen that in the mainstream press. Tenet knew about Moussaoui, knew about his problems, and in fact, right after September 11th, Tenet said, hey, maybe that's something to do with him. The point I'm making, folks, is that Bush, even if he knows what's going on, doesn't know what to do about it. And as Paul O'Neill, former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, made clear, it is Cheney making the decisions. So I thought it was just laughable that Bush insists that Dick Cheney be by his side. Prince George doesn't want to appear before the commission unless he's got, well, the guy controlling the nation by his side. Which reminds me, if Dick Cheney has a heart attack, and, you know, I mean, he's had heart problems. If he has a heart attack and Dick Cheney dies, that's really scary because George Bush would then become our president. Think about it. It'd be the first time in American history the vice president would die and the president would become president. But one thing I just have to remark in the Washington Post, in addition to the fact that Bush has got to have Dick Cheney by his side, he can't handle it alone. Our little president can't be alone before the commission because, you know, he doesn't really know enough to be president, so he's got to have, you know, his friend by his side. One thing that struck me is that the commission, according to Bush, will not be allowed to tape record the session. Bush will not be under oath so he can lie with impunity. Remember when they said Clinton had to be under oath to talk about Monica Lewinsky? Okay. But Bush doesn't have to be under oath to talk about the worst terrorist attack in American history. Interesting. Interesting. So sex outside of marriage is more important than 3,000 American murders. Well, I guess that's their position. But what's interesting is that in addition to not being allowed to not testifying, the commission cannot tape record the session. But guess what? The White House is going to tape record the session. That will allow them to do the cherry picking they do so well. So Bush gives 2 hours of lies and he makes, you know, one good statement in 5 minutes. I guarantee you that'll be used in his campaign commercials. Very nice. Very nice. I would hope one day we could get a president that actually was willing to come before the American people and answer questions about the worst terrorist attack in American history. But hey, you know, our guy's not quite up to it. He needs his friend Dickie Cheney by his side. So I just can't wait. And I hope that you know, David Letterman, Jay Leno, that all of them will go and talk about the fact that Bush has to have Cheney by his side. Have we ever had a president that is so dependent on his advisors as our current one? I don't know. But that's not our topic today. I just had to mention it in the news. Our topic is overtime, and I want to talk specifically about the Bush provisions to end overtime. I want to talk with Kelly Ross, the AFL-CIO, and he's going to tell us exactly what this provision entails, how many workers will lose overtime. He will tell you if you will lose your overtime and what they're doing in Congress to stop it. They're doing very interesting legislative backflips, basically. The Senate has voted against it. The House has voted against it. But don't think that your sixth grade social studies class is right, because they'll tell you the Constitution says if the Senate votes against it and the House votes against it, that it doesn't become law, right? If they both vote against it and the president, it goes to the president, right, to veto. Nope. That's not how it works in our legislature. We're going to explain all the details to you, and we're going to have Kelly Ross right after these messages. If you want to call in and be heard on the Inside Scoop, you want to ask if your overtime will be safe, please do so. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. Call in, be heard, and find out whether you're going to lose overtime right after these messages.
From the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York.
George W. Bush reversed course under heavy pressure on Tuesday and agreed to let his national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, give sworn testimony before the September 11th commission. Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney also agreed to meet together privately with the full panel, abandoning their earlier insistence that they would meet only with the commission's chairman and vice chairman. Rice was likely to testify toward the end of next week, with Bush and Cheney following sometime after that, a senior administration official said. In one of the bloodiest days and weeks for the U.S. military, five troops died when a bomb exploded under their military vehicle west of Baghdad on Wednesday. At least four foreign nationals, including one American, were killed in a separate attack, and some of the bodies were burned, beaten, and hanged from a bridge. A military spokesman declined to say what nationality the soldiers were, but the vast majority of troops operating in the Al-Anbar province west of Baghdad are U.S. Marines. Treasury Secretary John Snow reignited the political argument over U.S. companies shipping jobs overseas Tuesday with comments that outsourcing was an integral part of a global trading system. Snow's comments in economically hard-hit Ohio were published as George W. Bush was delivering a speech defending his free trade policies in Wisconsin, a state that has lost 80,000 manufacturing jobs. Asked in a newspaper interview whether he